This is the Schnauzer Logic Radio Company.
And this is Schnauzer Logic, the podcast. This is our 30th anniversary episode being recorded on Wednesday. It is October the 4th, 2006.
Groundbreaking, critically acclaimed, smash hits, HBO original series. And now, the HBO original series.
Schnauzer Logic.
Bob and Nancy were celebrating their 30th wedding anniversary. See what I did there? I kind of put it together. After 30 years, Bob wanted to know if Nancy was always faithful. Bob asked, "Have you ever cheated on me?" Nancy replied, "Yes, 3 times. "What?" yelled Bob. "When?" Nancy said, "Remember when the septic tank flooded back in 69 and we couldn't afford to fix it? I convinced the plumber to fix it for free." "And?" Nancy said, "And remember when you needed heart surgery in 75 and we didn't have insurance? I had the doctor treat you for free." "And the 3rd time, do you remember when you ran for mayor back in 89 and you were behind by about 200 votes?
Clinton, liberals, dittos!
I'm Dr. Mora and I'm my poodle's mother.
Today on All Things Considered to Death, Moss.
Yeah, baby, show me your...
Son of Vista, my friends, Son of Vista, and welcome! You have managed to tune in, latch on, and otherwise download that stream of bits known around the world as Schnauzer Logic. Yes, this is Schnauzer Logic, the podcast, and we are up to episode number 30, our big anniversary episode being recorded on Wednesday. It is October the 4th, 2006. My name is Robin Goldstein. I'm your host. I'm your buddy. I'm your pal. I'm also a straight white Buddhist vegetarian lesbian fraternity boy trapped in the body of a recovering transsexual woman patent attorney with a bizarre sense of humor and a master's degree in city planning, and I am thrilled and delighted to invite each and every one of you to stick around for the next 2 hours. We have a great, huge, amazing show. If you thought last week's show was too big, and I know many of you did, I know last week's show we had to actually open up the top button of the pants of the show. I won't tell you where that button is located, but we did. This week's show, even bigger. And of course it has to be. It's our 30th anniversary. This week, we're going to be welcoming to the Schnauzer Logic airwaves the owner, a kind of broadcasting magnate, if you will, the Ted Turner of the Central Coast of California, Michael Zwirling. That got you.
I can't tell if he's laughing or crying.
Michael Zwirling, MZ, the man who gave birth. Without Michael Zwirling, there would be no Schnauzer Logic.
It was a C-section.
Michael has agreed to be on the show today. We're also, after much strum and drang, and asking and pleading many, many times, we've gotten our good friend Jan Karam's going to be a guest on the show today.
Wow.
That's great.
Absolutely. And Jan called me today. She was at an audition. And she called me on the phone as I was getting ready to do the show. And she said to me, "I'm getting ready to go into an audition. And it has something to do with popular events. What was that whole thing between Tom Cruise and Sumner Redstone?" I go, you mean the thing where he got fired? Yeah, that. Tell me about that. So I proceeded to try to, like, explain the whole thing. She goes, "His name is Tom Redstone?" I go,
when was the last time she picked up a Variety?
I don't know. I said, I just show him your tits if I were you. Jason Nathanson's going to be with us today. We're going to continue with our weekly television review. And I got the numbers right in front of me here. I'm holding in my formerly nicotine-stained fingers, the Rush Limbaugh sound effect papers. So we've got the ratings here. We'll talk with Jason about that. And Eliza Alfrichtig from Harvard. First of all, Eliza's got a real telephone this week. Be much easier to see her. In addition, the front page of today's Harvard Crimson talks about Harvard is going to be recasting their core curriculum. They're now going to require the students to take life sciences, an ethical course, a course on faith and religion. And I want to kind of get a little clue about what this is all about here and get into that with her. So we got that going on, plus stuff and nonsense. Parviz is not here.
He's not here.
Aww. Not here. We're very sorry about that. So let's officially start what's going on and say Son of Easter to Sean Meehan.
Son of Easter, my friends. Son of Easter, all my online friends. And I know there are millions
Happy
of you.
Happy 30th anniversary to you, my friend.
Boy, it is an honor to be here on this auspicious occasion.
Honor to have you here as well. And Son of Easter to the... It's like our fourth stooge. You're like Curly Joe. You're not Curly, you're not Shemp, but it works.
Okay.
Sherry Stevens, Son of Easter.
Son of Easter, Robin.
Thank you for sitting in at the last minute. And of course, big 30th anniversary welcome to Mr. Kip Adada. Mr. Michael's whirling on tape later. He'll be live.
Stroke or unload.
We've got Dick Cheney. We've got Harry Whittington. We've got Whitney Houston.
Kiss my ass!
And of course, the ever-loving Samuel L. Jackson.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Sherry has hair, too,
by
the way.
Never gets older, huh?
Sherry has hair. I just wanted to clear that up because our listeners. Well, you said that she was like Curly Joe. And of course, Shemp and Curly Joe all shared one distinguishing trait.
Oh.
Baldness.
Was Shemp bald?
Shemp may not have been bald, but I wanted to say this. So
I do have hair. Not as much as Robin does.
She has nice hair.
Yes.
And
more
nice
than
hair.
Shemp had, if indeed Shemp had hair, which is still in question. That balls
and
up in the air.
What kind of name is Shemp?
I think it's from the Latin. I think it's a Roman name. It's an old Roman name. Is
that
it
right?
Not?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So it went from being in this room 95 to 100 degrees on a weekly basis, and now we're all wearing long sleeves and sweaters. And
yeah, it's like Ice Station Zebra in here. It's like...
How the fuck did that happen?
Quickly.
How can people say that there's nothing wanky going on with the environment? I mean, you can't look at any individual weather event and go, that's evidence of global warming. It doesn't work that way. That's like saying that every child is evidence of God. I've met many of them. It's not true.
But every child could give evidence against Mark Foley. That's just something I've discovered.
I know. I was waiting for some sound bites from Mark Foley.
I don't have sound bites from Mark Foley. Well,
but maybe you could put some online.
This is remarkable. You've been following this.
Oh, hasn't everyone?
You gleefully.
Know, yeah.
There is a certain amount of glee in this.
Of course.
Oh, how the mighty have fallen. What is it?
Part of it is the irony, I think, that he pushed through the legislation to prevent just this sort of thing from happening.
Head of the committee, was he? Or
yeah.
What?
Yeah, I believe he was a co-chair on that.
Co-chair of the committee, yeah.
I see. And that's ironic.
If you'd like, I mean, there's the fly in the Chardonnay, and then there's being the co-chair on the committee that passes the law that puts you away. That's
Oh,
yeah,
man.
It's like rain on your wedding day, you know?
Well, it's like they say most people that work
Thank
in mental
you,
hospitals and mental institutions are there because they are truly mentally ill and they're attracted to that profession.
Wow.
I'd heard that.
I think I've heard something very similar.
Probably is true. I think it's true that a lot of people in the mental health game got into it because they're looking to heal themselves.
Exactly.
Right? I think that's probably fair. But there's a gleefulness in going after Foley. I mean, this is really written. This is sort of become kabuki theater.
Well, it's so torrid and naughty.
Well, do we know whether he did anything with any of these kids? Or is it just
Well,
kind
there
of...
are rumors coming up now that he did. This is being recorded on Wednesday.
Yes.
And
make an admission right now?
Is sure. Sure. Come by. I mean, because the beauty of these stories.
Show me where. Show us on the bill where he touched you.
Exactly. The beauty of these stories lately, these sort of Republican scandal stories,
is
people have been hearkening back to the Studs. You know, issue
Jerry Studs,
Massachusetts,
right? Barney Frank, Massachusetts. Yeah, William Weld, Massachusetts. Not gay, but
throw him in. What the hell?
Everything works better in threes.
Absolutely.
Which was something that he IM'd apparently to one of those kids.
The beauty of this story, and frankly, all the recent Republican debacles, is that, you know, the Studs story was just the Studs story. But these are bombs. These aren't really bombs. These are cluster bombs. Because they explode into 1,000 little bomblets. This is not just the Mark Foley bomb. It's exploding all around Republican leadership and people on the staff of Republican leadership.
And rockets,
it's a pyrotechnical festival for the senses. It's incredible.
And it couldn't have come at a worse fucking time for the Republicans. I mean, they're trying to hold on to the House and to the Senate. Right. And now they're calling for Hassert to and, you know, the Speaker of the House, Dennis Hastert. He's a
you can just call him fat guy.
Yeah. He's a fairly poor sign individual, I think. And the cameras take great delight in getting as close to the third chin as they possibly can. Have you noticed that? Usually they're very respectful when they shoot him from a distance and they shoot him sort of straight on, and they do it so that you know that he's a fat guy, but he doesn't look like Jabba the, you know, the senator turned his, you know, the Republican who turned his head. But now they're taking incredible delight. I mean, he's vile looking. They're enlarging the pores. I think even Photoshop pore.
You want to just separate those chins and check in there for change and lint and a remote control and
maybe a page.
Hiding.
Well,
hiding
that would be defense for him. Exactly. I was hiding pages in my chins. I mean, it's nothing to laugh about, obviously, but
no, it is.
It does. It does seem like, you know, none but the righteous, right? So the incredibly self-righteous. There must be something in the Bible about this. Jesus or someone said something. Jesus, John Lennon, somebody said something about that. This kind of hypocrisy, and yet they are so practiced in the Republican Party in being able to spin that I think they've actually done a fair amount of damage control, certainly within their base. Because I've heard callers to talk radio in the last couple of days parroting the what about Jerry Studs and what about Bill Clinton, and they're already sort of deflecting. It's, you know, phasers are on maximum and the shields are up for deflection at this point.
I suspect that they were strategizing this prior to these events going public. My suspicion
is that's disturbing too.
That's the basis of most of the claims of cover up now. You know, it is disturbing to think that Republican leadership understood that this was going on and allowed it to go on because they felt that it kept a congressional seat safe. But knowing that it was going on, I'm sure that someone was thinking, okay, we need a plan when this thing blows. We need some talking points. And I just noticed that within hours of the confrontation with Foley, he had resigned.
Right.
If your assumption is that within hours of his resignation or within hours of his informing the Republican leadership that he was resigning, that's when they got going on their spin control, I think it's difficult. You really have to take your hat off to them for how sophisticated the spin control was.
Yeah.
In such a brief period of time, everyone's story was pretty much, everyone's talking points were calibrated by that evening.
Yep. They clearly went from zero to 60 in almost no seconds.
Yeah.
And now we'll have to see how the public, you know, because what they've managed to do is they've managed to alienate the religious right, because it's all about the children. And so this is not something that they are able to easily line up with. The torture, we're okay with that. The right's okay with that. The religious
part. They're heathens.
Yeah.
They're heathens. These may well have been Christian pages.
Exactly. All right. Here's what we're going to do. We'll take a break. We'll play our first tune. I needed to remind you guys that all the music from today's show comes from Podshow Network, which is all PodSafe music. And it is http://music.podshow.com. We'll put a link on the website. We'll come back on the other side, and with any luck, we'll be talking to Michael Zwirling. You are listening to Schnauzer Logic. It is our 30th anniversary episode, and we're all inviting you to please stick around.
I want to know why you like to dress up like a girl sometimes.
This is Schnauzer Logic.
more fun than flushing the toilet while your spouse is in the shower.
Ah! Oh, sorry.
Schnauzer logic.
Welcome back. We're about 19 minutes into this episode of Schnauzer Logic, the podcast. Robin Goldstein, straight white Buddhist vegetarian lesbian fraternity boy trapped in the body of a recovering transsexual woman patent attorney with a bizarre sense of humor and a master's degree in city planning, www.schnauzerlogic.com. Robin at schnauzerlogic.com. We got a phone number. It is area code 206-666-6540. Let's say son of Easter to Sean Meehan.
Son of Easter all.
And son of Easter to Sherry Stevens.
Son of Isa, everyone.
All of my friends have S's in their names. Very important for the whole son of Easter thing. So we were talking a little bit in the first segment and before the show today. We play a little bit of audio every week from Michael's Whirling. People who listen to the show know we play this every week from Michael.
Stroke or unload.
And Michael knows we play this. Michael is a terrific sport. And Michael, I think, was instrumental to both Sean and I being on the radio. If there was no Michael's Whirling, if there was no KSCO, there wouldn't be a Schnauzer Logic. I'm not kidding around when I say that. That was definitely shaking your head on the radio. Everything you learned.
I'm demonstrating right now. No, I didn't want to step on you, which is something I learned at KSCO.
So we got a little intro for Michael. We're going to bring him on with us. Hold on here.
Radio, that wonderful invention where I can reach millions of people who fortunately cannot reach me.
All right. You know him, you love him, you can't get enough of him. He's the owner of KSCO. He's the owner of KOMY. He's the owner of the Zwirling Broadcast System. The website fireyoursalesforce.com. He's a personal friend of Dr. Joel Wallach.
Dead doctors don't lie.
And just a nice guy. And he's agreed to be on the airways with us. Let me punch down the button, as we are wont to do, and say, son of Easter to Michael's Whirling. Welcome to Schnauzer Logic.
What a kick to hear those familiar chortles. and a lot more production value than we ever had here.
Oh,
God, dang, welcome to the world of podcasting. We're trying to convert and having a hell of a time.
Well, I've heard some of your podcast. That's not true. You're always very self-deprecating humor there. But, I mean, Sean and I were talking about it, and I was thinking about it today, and as much as we kind of goof around, everything that makes this show what it is came out of the laboratory that was KSCO. You gave us the airwaves, a studio, a production library to begin to learn how to do these kind of things. And so for that,
wow.
I think we're forever, I mean,
absolutely.
Really forever grateful. And no bullshit, Michael. Thanks very much.
Wait a minute. We can say bullshit now because we're not on the air.
Fucking A, you can say bullshit.
Hey, I like this. That's great. No, let's see. What is it? What's that Yiddish expression? I'm swelling with nachas.
Well,
you
then
can
see
have that Lance.
See your doctor or pharmacist.
Yeah.
How you guys doing? What's new?
We're terrific, and we're all good. We're sitting here in the little Schnauzer studios that we used to do the AirPlay radio show from, and we've just kind of repurposed it for a podcast. Now, people know about the things that happened at KSCO about a week ago. First of all, I want to make sure everybody's okay.
Yeah, as far as I know, everybody's great. You know, there aren't that many of us to check up on, and so I don't think anybody's unaccounted for.
Do you have any sense, I mean, that you can share with us what the hell happened?
Well, it's very simple. Someone sent a unmarked, no return address envelope with white powder in it a week ago Monday. And it was opened, and the people here did what they did when the powder fell out, did what they should have done exactly, and they called 911, and within minutes the authorities were here, and HAZMAT was here, and the FBI was here, and the employees were quarantined, and the building was quarantined, and they couldn't even go between rooms within the radio station, I understand. I wasn't here. I had just returned from a vacation, believe it or not, when I was in Hawaii and had taken the red eye, and was pretty sleep deprived already when I got this call. that there was a problem at the radio station and the nature of the problem, and that they were going to have to, at the very least, change the programming, because one half of our afternoon drive crew, the program that's called A Happy Hour, co-hosted by two young guys here, Rick O'Shea and Phil Marlowe, were separated, and Phil Marlowe was at the controls of the of both radio stations actually, and Phil was not Rick was not allowed to leave the front room, and so Phil did just an amazing job of keeping everybody informed about what was going on and doing a running play by play, but come 4 o'clock. You know, what was he going to do, because his co-host wasn't available, and they hadn't had any time to prep for the show, which they normally spend at least 2 or 3 hours. And so I called in on the ISDN line that I have between my house up at the Bay Area, and that's another thing. If I would have returned to Santa Cruz, we would have ultimately have had to go off the air, which is right. A terrible thing when you're a broadcast station, because you have your share of loyal audience that will keep checking to see when you're back. But I think there's probably as many people who, you know, are not particularly loyal, and who, when they don't hear their favorite radio program or whatever it is they expect to tune in, to hear when they tune in, they're going to switch, and they might not come back.
And you did stay on the air. I mean,
you were
the Jerry Lewis of radio.
When I heard that we were being ordered to evacuate, that the staff was being ordered to evacuate, and that Rosie said we must sign off at 7 o'clock, boss. I said this was all this drama was unfolding on the air. I said, Rosie, read my lips. We are not signing off. We have to. There's nobody. We're not going to be, there's nobody here to run the radio station. And I said, well, I'm here, and I'm 80 miles away, but I can program the radio station.
So you weren't convincing to her, though, because you said read my lips over the phone.
I know.
And that was the hole in the whole thing.
It didn't register with her.
Also, she had just had a cold water shower and was standing naked in the parking lot.
Poor Rosie, poor Billy, poor Rick, they were the three people who had to take showers, ice cold decontamination showers, in full public view, naked, in the parking lot.
And only Billy liked it.
Only Billy liked it. Right. Right. So, but it, and what was really funny is that Phil, who was doing just an amazing job, right up through 7 o'clock, or right up just a few minutes before 7 o'clock, when he was told that he too was going to have to be decontaminated. Up until then, he didn't think that, he thought that he would escape it and would be able to leave through the back or something.
But the bullet found him.
No, they said, well, there's somebody else in there. No, he's got to do it too. And I'll tell you something. If you listen to the recording, Phil's attitude underwent a decided metamorphosis at that point. He had been, up until that point, very, very in control, very professional, very sure of himself, and when he learned that he was going to have to go through the decontamination that was bumming everybody else out, and had totally bummed them out. It was not one of those things that's not as bad as you think it's going to be. It was worse than they thought it would be.
Right.
And he talked a lot about shrinkage,
because they were on the air after this happened with me and him. And I could just imagine what he was thinking. Oh, boy, thank God I don't have to go through that. But then he did. And then he found out he did it. It's just like it crushed the poor guy. You know, so.
But everything's back to normal at this point.
Well, I mean, what's normal?
It's KSCO, but within the normal parameters, it's back to normal. And you got the back page of today's Mercury Entertainment section.
Oh, really?
Brad Kovat. Did you not know this?
Yeah, Brad talked to me the other day, and so I figured, you know, appear sometime.
I don't
here.
Know. You got, what, 6 column inches, maybe? You got a lot of ink today, Michael.
You did.
Great. I didn't realize that Brad is a Santa Cruz resident now, or a Santa Cruz County resident.
No.
And he said, he told me on the telephone that we are the radio station he listens to. all the time now, which is amazing.
Outstanding.
I mean, that's pretty cool.
That's very, very cool. And well, so he did a couple of things. First of all, he recounted this story, and I think he did a nice job of bringing all the facts to it. He also let drop the bombshell that I was not aware of, that you're going to be jettisoning the programming of Air America Radio next month.
You didn't know that, Robin?
I did not know that.
Nor did I.
Well, this comes as news.
Weren't able to or didn't know, maybe you found out about this after the fact, but I was on for, 28 hours, as it turned out, before, I thought it might be 2 or 3 hours, but it ended up being 28 hours before we, got the green light to reoccupy
go back
the building
into the station.
Here, so.
Yep.
And during that 23 hours, we talked about that quite a lot. So,
See, we didn't know about that going on until Doug Sovereign of KCBS, who's a friend of Dave and Susie and Misha, you know, all the folks that I know from KSCO, sent out a little note saying that this was actually going on at this point, but I had not picked up on it.
I see.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, we talked about that, and it gave us fodder. I mean, you got to come up with something to fill up some content for that amount of time.
So that's sort of unusual because you were in the unique position of being, first of all, you remain in the unique position of being one of the last independent radio owners in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got a 10,000-watt station, you've got a little blowtorch over there in the central coast that covers a great part of the state, plus you've got the KOMY signal, and you were basically counter-programming. You had liberal on one side, you had conservative on the other side, and that gave you a really unique perspective. Now I guess that's going away, and so
the reason it's going away, Robin, is because it just was not commercial. End of story. I don't know whether it's not commercial because liberal radio doesn't sell, or if it's not commercial because of what some person said that I didn't really like to hear. But I think the guy was honest and genuine when he called one of the KSCO talk shows, Vernon's a Friday program, mm-hmm. I don't know, about a month ago, maybe 5 weeks ago, and somehow the topic was, isn't it strange that in the most liberal town in America, a place that makes Berkeley look right-wing, that Air America doesn't seem to be a commercial success, you know, on a radio station that's pretty much totally committed to it. And someone called and said, I'm very thankful that Air America is on KOMY, but I'm a business person, and I got to be honest. I would slit my throat before I would put one dime of money into Michael Swerling's pocket, because he owns that station, and I know what his personal politics are, and they're not progressive. And he also owns a station that has Rush Limbaugh and Michael Savage, so I can't, in good conscience, buy any advertising on KOMY because of that. Guys, that's what I'm up against. And, it sank in after about 14 months. I should have figured it out a long time ago. I had heard, someone said that, in fact, I think someone said that Brad Cava even talked about Air America not doing too well even in San Francisco. Is that...
Not in this particular article, although he may have. The first part of the article talks about the changes that are going on at the Quake 960 up in the city, KQKE.
Okay, well that's what I'm talking about, because
yeah.
That's the Air America station.
Affiliate, there. But he doesn't actually, there's no comment in there about they're having a problem. They basically booted Willie Brown. They talk about how the PD is the first person
so
to have
really
the...
Okay, wasn't about Air America.
No.
He and I were talking during our interview, and he said, I guess that's where I got it. When he said, gee, I understand they're not doing all that well up there. There are changes going on at AM 960 at the Quake. And I said, so I just presumed that...
Do you think it's because liberals and progressives in general have become so turned off to the format of talk radio in general, you know, Air America notwithstanding?
I don't think that at all.
That they get most of their news from... Okay.
I think that there's a couple of reasons. Number one... progressive liberal people have always had their own talk radio outlet, and it's a very fine talk radio outlet. It's called NPR.
But that's, you know what, with all due respect, that seems to be crap from my point of view, because I...
NPR is crap, or it's crap that
no,
they...
No, I hear that all the time. No, I can't listen to NPR. It's
I can't either.
It's unlistenable.
It's humorless.
Why?
It's exactly.
Why
I make fun of it.
It's much too professional for my blood. But you see, I'm a what's What's the word? What's the word for what I'm not very professional. I'm the antithesis of professionalism. And proud of it.
Well, Michael, I just want to tell you, I tried to turn your negatives into a positive by telling my friends in business, if you put dimes in Michael's pocket, eventually they will weigh his trousers to such an extraordinary extent that they will fall, and you can point and laugh at him.
And that is absolutely true. I mean, that would have been true, but unfortunately,
that's a goal that we can all get behind. He will enjoy the money in the pocket. You will enjoy the pointing and laughing. It's
all
a win-win.
All about the pantsing the owner.
Yeah.
Right.
They didn't go, apparently.
And they didn't even listen to you, Sean. Now, when did you start using that approach? I mean, was it like 6 months or a year ago?
I may have come late to the game.
Well, you know, if they put quarters in his pocket, they don't need quite as many because quarters are heavier.
That's right. just some lead doubloons. Just get anything in there. But they wouldn't, no.
Liquid. So listen, why didn't I see either of you guys at the Portable Media Expo last week?
Oh, down in Southern California?
In Ontario, yeah.
Well, I don't know what did they have to offer us. I'm doing my show.
There are hookers.
No, you're right. You don't need to hang around and be a groupie.
I'm doing my show.
Yeah,
I got my show. It's up online. We've got listeners.
Those who can, once a week.
We get into the studio. We do the program. The reality is, because you know better than most of the people who are podcasting out there are crap. It's shit. It sounds awful. The production values. I mean, I understand that our show sounds a whole lot better than almost anything else that's going
on
out there.
It really does. I've got to say.
Well, I got a Gentner digital hybrid because I saw what you did, and I've got a Mackie mixer, and I've got three nice large diaphragm condenser mics, and it all runs through a DBX. I went and looked in your control room, and I wrote down notes. I figured if it works for Michael, it'll work for me.
Sure.
I'm not stupid. It's called research.
Yeah, it probably works better for you because you don't get any RF interference.
Well, and I'm the only one using the equipment, which makes it a whole lot easier.
It's called industrial espionage.
Well, but what did you see? So you went down, did you go down to the podcasting expo down there?
Well, I wouldn't miss it.
Oh,
I was at the first one last year,
cool.
and I was at this one.
Well, you can be our correspondent.
Even though I was totally sleep deprived.
Well, what did you see that changed, that kind of opened your eyes to some possibilities?
Nothing. Oh. Actually, I did enjoy listening to a presentation. You know, I really shouldn't say that. I was very, very stimulated when I was there because it was a room full. I mean, there were thousands of people there attending this convention. I'm sure there were more people there than at NAB a week or two earlier, which I had totally forgotten about. And here's something for you. I was talking to my friend, not to drop names. I have a number of friends in the radio industry who like own publications and who are, you know, editors and publishers of broadcast magazines. Michael Harrison is one. And
Talkers.
Yeah, and Eric Rhodes from Radio Inc. is another. And I was talking to Eric Rhodes it's either yesterday or the day before. Just sort of catching up, as I hadn't talked to him in a few months, and I asked him. I said, "How was NAB?" Because Radio Inc. is always a major sponsor. You know, they always have their logos on all the bags that people carry around and everything. And he said, "I didn't go." I said, "You didn't go?" It blew me away. You could have knocked me over with a feather.
Yeah.
I mean, what does that tell you about the radio industry? I mean, it's like death.
They've given up.
It's death.
They've given up. They're recycling the same old ideas.
It's awful.
It's the same old ideas, and the audience has become a diffuse, if you will, across multiple forms of media.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I wouldn't get rid of the stations yet. I'd hold on to them.
Let's talk about that, because I really do blow hot and cold on every time I'm just, you know, aggravated because of... You know, we lost our business manager this year, earlier this year, and we had a interim business manager that, you know, didn't really work out, and it was just been a horrible, horrible, headachey, hassle-y year for me personally. And I have been very, very, very tempted to just say, screw it and sell out while I can to some Hispanic broadcaster or some bigger company, probably not Clear Channel, because they're cutting back and they're dumping stations around the country or starting to.
No, but you own a
every
radio
time
station.
I get
Miguel
real close
Swirly.
To that.
I think you should sell out to you. You lose the antipathy of and the enmity of the local liberal community. You're Miguel Swirling. You're the champion of Latino radio. You rebrand yourself, and you're on top again, my friend. Your pockets are full of dime.
What do you mean again? What are you talking about? I've never been on top.
And they're laughing at you. And for those of you from the constipated segment of our audience, it'll clean you right out and put you in a much better mood.
Who is that asshole anyhow?
Stroke or unload?
Well, so anyhow, every time I think about that, then I think about you know, the great cast of characters we have here.
It's not going to happen. I mean, I know you. I'm sure in your more lucid moments, it makes sense that you don't need the headaches. But you own a radio station. That puts you in pretty rarefied company. I mean,
Robin, Sean, listen to me. It ain't no big deal to own a radio station, and it gets less of a big deal every day that passes because of guys like you and guys like I want to be.
Yeah, but. Okay, well, what do you mean, like, guys that you want to be?
I want to be a new media person. I want to be part of an industry that's singing and that's growing and that has people who are passionate, not people who are
yeah, but what,
forlorn and depressed.
What better jumping off point, though, than a 10,000-watt terrestrial radio station? I mean, you've got all of the things
well,
that you would
it,
need.
It is true that we can use this station to innovate.
Yeah, and you can anchor a lot of new
always,
media.
That's been its value from day, and it's given my I love being able to keep my mom. Yeah, I know you lost your mom recently. I'm very sorry to hear that, and I wish you the serious condolences. What is going on here? You could tell I'm at the radio.
I think you
could
pick up your bags at counter number two.
Right. Either that or someone's gone code blue in the studio.
But my mother has this wonderful outlet to spout off. And when I was on for 28 hours, probably 26 of them were accolades about her and her commentaries. Now, this is I got to say, you know, when it became clear after, let's see, we started at about at 7 p.m. On Monday night. Oh, come on. hold on, I'm going to... Robin, do you guys know how to turn that stuff off in here? I don't.
So this is why you want to get out of the radio business.
I think there's a do not disturb button. Hold on a second.
Oh, sure, of course, yeah.
Now,
Well, on to our next order of business.
We'll just talk amongst yourselves.
I know I'm curious, given the latest excitement, is there an ongoing investigation? Do you have suspects? I mean, are people being waterboarded? Or is it,
Rosie is positive she knows who it is, but that person has been cleared by the cops. So, and I have some very strong suspicions, and I'm passing that information along to the FBI.
Outstanding. So there is some direction to go in.
Yeah, I mean, who knows how seriously they're going to take the investigation, because once it was determined beyond a shadow of a doubt, 100%, not just 99.9%, which happened after about an hour, after about the first hour, it's been totally ruled out that there was no DNA or nothing biological in the powder. And I get the feeling that nobody cares after that.
Right.
Hope I'm wrong. I hope there is an investigation, and I hope they find that, what did I call it in the promo? That slimy weasel who did this, who was trying to hurt us, and who ended up, you know, helping us, really, you know, making us stronger by what he did. Because I'm sure the plan was to knock us off the air. And that would have hurt us. I mean, that definitely would have killed some of our audience.
But they didn't. You survived. And,
yeah.
And our hats are off to you. We really are impressed. And boy, it's been just terrific having you. You know, we don't get a chance to talk much these days because separate locations and what have you. Maybe I know you're going to have a party out out at the station on Saturday. Are you going to be in attendance?
I assume you'll be here.
I certainly hope so.
Oh, gosh. Absolutely.
Good.
Thank you
very much. Yeah, we're having a white powder potty in the parking lot.
All right. And I'd love to have you come back again and talk a little more with us.
Oh,
I mean,
it would be such an honor.
You got
and a
great.
Privilege
oh, no. The honor is ours.
Because I can say fuck that I can't do here.
As long as your mom's not in the studio with us, you're safe.
She wouldn't mind. She says it more than I do.
Well, bring her on.
All right, I'll have her. Yeah. Should I ask her to be a guest?
Sure. Absolutely.
Okay,
we'd love to have Kay.
She probably will, too.
We'd love to have her on the show.
All right.
Thank you, Michael.
Take care.
It was
all
a
the
pleasure.
Best. Take care.
Bye bye.
Bye bye. There you go.
MZ, Michael Zwirling.
Michael Zwirling.
Miguel Zwirling.
Separated at birth. All right, here's what we're going to do. We'll take another break. We'll play another song.
I gotta wipe away a tear.
I guess I didn't get the whole thing.
That's it.
All right, we're back on the other side. Stick around.
Viva, viva, viva la radio.
Stick around for more Schnauzer Logic.
Funny. Keeps me entertained.
Funny comedy.
Those tree-hugging sissies.
Now your host, Brian Cox.
The Holy Grail of comedy. Welcome to Road Stories of the Real Highway Comics. I'm Brian Cox. And if there's one place to be seen doing comedy, and you better do it well, it's at the Comedy Store in Los Angeles, California. Carson, Leno, Letterman, Carlin, Murphy, Rock, they've all got their start at the Comedy Store in Los Angeles, run by a fine lady by the name of Mitzi. I'm not sure if she's still running it, but she was when I was there anyway. She can be a bit of a hard ass, but she's always fair. And you might know her son, Pauly Shore. Well, now here's a story about starting off in comedy, but starting off on the stage at the Comedy Store in Los Angeles. Sent to me by a good buddy of mine, Leif Skiving, a true road comic. Check him out on the internet, leifskiving.com. Now, here's his story, and I'm going to do it in first person as he wrote it. I think you're going to enjoy this one. Attending broadcasting school in Los Angeles, California, a fellow student offhandedly mentioned that he was also doing stand-up at the Comedy Store. You see, it was 1977. I was 22 years old. I was intrigued. I'd always loved doing stand-up, and I knew at this time of my life I had the knack of really making people laugh. But it never occurred to me that I could actually do stand-up like those guys on TV. I asked him how to go about doing stand-up. He told me that you could call the Comedy Store, get on the list of their Monday night open mic night. Well, it was that simple. Well, I called the very next day, and lo and behold, I had a spot on the roster on the following Monday. Now, the evening before my scheduled spot, I decided to maybe have something prepared. So I wrote 5 minutes of what I was sure was brilliant material. It was a storyline based on the movie The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance, complete with impressions of Lee Marvin, Jimmy Stewart, and John Wayne. As I wrote, I saw myself wowing the crowd with my dead-on impersonations and pithy punchlines. The following night, I drove 30 miles from my home in San Pedro to Hollywood. I arrived at 6:30 for the 8 p.m. show. After waiting outside for about an hour with the other aspiring comedians, a young man sporting a mustache and a beret mounted an elevated wall and started to deliver a brief speech describing the history and the rules of the Comedy Store. We were told that when we saw the picture of Eddie Cantor on the wall light up, we had 1 minute to wrap it up. And we were given 2 drink tickets, ushered into the club, and instructed to sit in the back of the room. It was an awesome room, holding about 200 people, and it was packed. The stage was a large raised rectangle, perfectly centered against the back wall, jutting out and dominating the room. There was pictures of old-time comedy greats on every wall, a piano player playing the comics on and off the stage. The room was full of energy. I was told my spot was around 9 p.m. I thought, oh, prime time. This was 1977. Comedy was still in its infancy as a phenomenon, and there wasn't too many open micers eager to fill stages as there are today. I was excited. I had a good time outside the club with the other comics. I made them laugh. Hey, I thought, if I could make the other comics laugh, I was a shoo-in. I couldn't wait to show my stuff off. That is, until about 10 minutes before my turn. Suddenly, I was so nervous I couldn't think straight. I wasn't sure if I could remember exactly what I'd written the night before. I went to the bathroom, I pulled out 2 pages of single-line tight paper out of my back pocket, and hyperventilated. I stood in the restroom staring at those 2 pages of neatly typed paragraphs, and all I saw was 2 pages of neatly typed paragraphs. It was as if my mind had a Teflon coating. As I read, I would formulate the words, but then watch hopelessly as their meaning glided away. I told myself what was happening. It was just stage fright. Everything was going to be okay. I'd memorized those lines at home, and I would know them when I needed to. Well, telling myself that helped stave off complete panic. Then the MC wasted no time in getting my introduction done. I lurched out of the bathroom, relying firmly on autopilot to get me from the back of the room to the stage at the Comedy Store. Once on stage, I realized my initial fear of approaching the stage was only the beginning of my nightmare. I was shocked by the intensity of the stage lights. I couldn't see the audience. I opened my mouth to speak, and everything I'd written the night before or attempted to re-memorize in the men's room had evaporated. The sound system was surprisingly powerful, and all I heard was, resonating over the otherwise silent crowd. The firing order of my brain synapse was now completely out of sequence. I heard the term flop sweat and had no idea what that meant. Anyway, slowly, bits started coming back in my mind. I spit them out as soon as they got there. Fractured sentences, disjointed punchlines, and I was met by silence. That is until near the end of my 5 minutes when the comedians at the back of the room started heckling the hell out of me. I was mortified. The only laughs I heard during the set were the cruel comics at the back of the room. Well, I thought to myself, this sure looked a lot easier when someone else was doing it. I'd waited a good 6 months before I tried stand-up again, and then I picked a less glamorous open mic night for sure. It was a small vegetarian restaurant in East Hollywood called Natural Fudge. Less pressure, and it was a long time before I went to the Comedy Store again. My only saving grace is that I didn't invite anyone to come and see me. But then again, that might have made for a few laughs in years to come. Hey, Leaf, you remember when you were at the Comedy Store? Anyway, folks, there you go. Leaf Skiving story. Catch him at leafskiving.com. That's it for Road Stories of the Real Highway Comics. I'm Brian Cox.
Welcome back. We're 55 minutes into this episode of Schnauzer Logic. It is our 30th anniversary episode. Robin Goldstein, host buddy and pal, straight white Buddhist vegetarian, lesbian fraternity boy trapped in the body of a recovering transsexual woman pad attorney with a bizarre sense of humor and a master's degree in city planning.
And a popping sound in his ear.
I don't know what the hell happened there.
NSA. You know, that would be a funny road story. You get the story where one of the Canadian comics is rendered to Syria by mistake, tortured there, and comes back, and nobody laughs.
Did you cut it? You didn't cut it up? No. What did you do? Is it a whole thing?
I just cut it up.
See, we have a wrap now
okay.
For those.
And that's when it all went to shit. Son of East to my friends, Robin Goldstein here. It's Wednesday night. It's just around midnight as I'm recording this. We finished the show a little bit earlier this evening, and in the process of editing it, going through, fixing mistakes and things of that nature, I noticed that the computer apparently had a brain fart, if you will. At the point that you were listening to the show, instead of getting the rest of that particular part of the interview, we got a little bit something of this here.
So we have a wrap right now.
Okay.
For this.
Yeah, you get the idea. That went on for about 6 minutes, I think. When we came back, we actually had the middle of Jason's interview, but there was some nice little noise superimposed over the whole thing that sounded a little bit something like this.
You know, you have the star athlete, he's dating that cheerleader.
I will avoid playing any more of that annoying part of it. Anyhow, thanks to the incredible software that's made by Bias out of Berkeley, California, and they've got a great piece of audio equipment called Sound Soap, I was able to remove the crackly parts and all their crackly goodness, and also to using Bias Peak to edit out the offending repeating material. What that means is we've lost about 6 minutes of the interview, which includes the beginning of Jason's segment. And what's so disturbing about that is not that Jason's segment is 6 minutes longer, but rather that we are missing the beginning of Jason's segment. I managed to put together something which I was very proud of. And so what I'm going to do now is I'm going to play the beginning of Jason's segment. You will hear his new opening. Unfortunately, you won't hear Jason giggle in the background. He thought this was very amusing and he giggled, trust me. And then when we come back, we'll actually be in the middle of Jason's interview. The rest of the interview, the rest of the program sounds pretty good. If it's a little crackly, we apologize. We'll figure out what the problem was. I think it was just a little bit of bad luck. 30 shows, and eventually we got caught by some gremlins. So there you go. Play the introduction for a Jason segment. We'll come back. We'll be doing Jason's show. Thanks very much for listening. Sorry for the technical difficulties. Next week will be better. Promise. ¶¶
I bought a bourgeois house in the Hollywood Hills with a trunk load of $100,000 bills. Man came by to hook up my cable TV. We settled in for the night, my baby and me. We switched round and round till half past dawn. There was 57 channels and
the bald Jewish guy in the 1988 VW van.
57 channels and
the bald Jewish guy in the 1988 VW van.
57 channels and
the bald Jewish guy in the 1988 VW van.
57 channels and nothing on. 57 channels and nothing on.
Here in the magazine.
Me and those five freshman college girls. That equals a 0.6.
And apparently representative Tom Foley. I initially thought it was Dave Foley from the Kids in the Hall. And then I thought to myself, well, shit, everybody knows that he's gay. And then I realized it wasn't Dave Foley, and apparently he's not gay. So shame on me. So
Dave Foley's not gay. Let's just get that straight right now for litigious purposes.
All right. So you watched the Gilmore Girls and what was it?
And Veronica Mars. And now I've been a fan of Gilmore Girls. I don't know how I started watching it, but a couple of years ago I did. And the writing's always been really good.
You were stoned.
Snappy.
Nothing to do.
Yeah. And
flipping around, there's a hot chick with a little tank top and a little kind of crop thing. And it's like... Okay,
exactly.
I can watch this.
Exactly. And you know, when it first started, the youngest chick on there was 15 or 16. So now she's legal.
Perfect.
So now it's okay to watch. And the writing's always been really good and snappy, and there's always pretty smart. And this year, the creators of the show have left over creative differences, and so now it's a different writing staff and a different directing producing staff.
That happens a lot.
It does, especially if you're on the CW. I think once they heard they're going to be on the CW, they said, we're fucking out of here.
Okay.
And so...
Direct quote.
We want to remain true to our viewer. We're out of here.
No, we're fucking out of here.
We're fucking out of here.
The show's kind of held up. I mean, a lot of people were scared when the creators left, but it's...
Explain to me. I am a Gilmore virgin. So explain to me what the story is about.
It's a mother and a daughter, and they move to this small little town to get away from the mother's parents. The mother, Lorelai Gilmore, had the daughter when she was just 16. So the daughter and the mother are very close in age. And it was originally about their relationship and this small little wacky town somewhere in Connecticut. And it's... As the daughter's grown up and she's gone to college and now she goes to Yale. One of the things I really liked about it was this small little town feel it had. And there's a town square and all the people in the town are characters in the story. And you know, it's cute and it's creative and it's, you know.
So it's a latter-day Mayberry.
That's what it sounds like.
Exactly.
And who's a target audience for this? Prepubescent girls? Is the young girl actress someone we'd all know? Is it a famous actress?
She was in Sin City.
That's a film that nobody saw.
I'm blanking on her name.
Okay.
But she's cute. And the mother, I'm also blanking on her name, but
Jessica,
she's pretty hot.
Lauren
Graham.
Here. Oh, yeah,
Lauren
sure.
Graham.
Of course.
And
Ponderosa.
And she's definitely hot. It's not the best show in the world, but you know, it's entertaining. I'm definitely not in their target demo, but for whatever reason, I seem to fall prey to crap.
I'm not sure that's true. I have a hunch that a lot of these shows have a secret target demo, which are single guys like you
and
right?
Mark
who live
Foley.
At home with their parents and are unemployed.
You got. Let me ask you a question. You have disposable income?
Do I? I used to.
Well, there you go. Money in the bank, baby.
Target audience.
Money in the bank. And what was the other one? Veronica Mars?
What's the premise of that show?
Yeah, what's that all about?
Veronica Mars is this hot chick, Kristen Bell, is a detective. She works with her dad. She was a high school chick, and now this season she's in college. And she goes around solving crimes in her area, which is a very kind of Laguna Beach type place. And I... I haven't really watched it except for the season premiere last night. I'd watched an episode or two before because Kristen Bell is just smoking hot. If you've ever seen her, she's a small little blonde chick, and she's just she's just hot. And it's a critical darling. A lot of people like it. The writing's pretty good, and she's this basically she's a hot Nancy Drew going around solving crimes. And so that was the season premiere was last night, and that was okay. I mean,
these are our shows, half hour.
Yeah,
shows?
they're hour long kind of comedy drama.
Dramedies, yeah, okay.
Yeah, and they're fluff. I mean, they're entertaining to watch.
Well, yeah, we got that
for a little while, but I mean, it's nothing that's going to rock your world.
So what masterpiece theater?
How did you cleanse your palate?
With a little Friday Night Lights. Which debuted last night as well.
All right, now I didn't see that. Now, is that based on the film? That it's based on the novel? That's based on the true story?
Not only based on it, it's written and directed by Peter Berg, who wrote the film based on the novel and directed the film based on the novel. And one of the
this is a high school football show, right?
Yeah. Did you see the movie?
No.
Okay. The woman who plays the wife of the coach.
I'm guessing you don't know her name. Huh?
I don't know her name either.
Yeah, okay. No. Just a guess.
she was on, what was that? It was Michael J. Fox, and he was the aide to the mayor.
Uh-huh, Spin City.
Spin City. She was
you
on
don't
that
do
show.
Any preparation for this segment at all, do you?
No. He's lucky if he stays awake for the shows that he's watching.
Yeah, pretty much.
He kind of goes online and looks like, what happened? He looks for the summaries over at TVSquad.com.
You've never even gone to IMDb.
I know he doesn't do that because it actually has the names of the people. There's this thing about this person and this kind of, you know, and...
I smoked a lot of pot in college. I smoked a lot of weed in college. I can't be expected to remember things.
No, you're doing very well. You're kind you're functional.
So, Friday Night Lights was it was exactly like the movie. The directing was the same. They had the shaky camera angles that they had in the movie.
Now the movie is the whole story in 2 hours. So after 2 weeks, what are they going to do?
And it's it's about this little town in Texas, Odessa, and the football team there, and the drama that surrounds a high school football team. And what a lot of people, at least in California, don't know is how big high school football is in a lot of these places because they don't have professional football, and the whole town goes to these Friday night games.
They don't have professional football in California? I mean, high school football?
They have high school football, but it's definitely not as big as
No, no, no. What'd you say? I missed what you said. I'm sorry. Sherry.
Oh, no. I was just clarifying what he was saying.
Yeah.
It was in Texas, not California.
Okay.
See, you got to do this more like McLaughlin. Is there high school football in California, Sherry?
Yeah, is there?
In California?
It's like Senor Wences, but his hand is up the butt a couple hundred miles away.
Which state are we talking about?
Confusion.
Where's Parviz when I need him?
Ding, 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 ding.
See, I like Parviz because I sound smarter usually.
In any case, you're right, though. A lot of these small communities in Texas, like Odessa, they're very involved in sports, and the nearest professional team is hundreds of miles away.
High school football is a big deal in Texas. We're taking judicial note of that.
Huge, huge deal.
Okay.
So this show is about following that team.
So is this sort of a latter-day White Shadow?
Oh, very interesting. Yes.
Okay.
What was White Shadow?
Ken Howard played a coach of an inner city, I believe Los Angeles based.
Yes. White coach of a mostly black basketball team.
Right, in a black inner city school.
Yeah.
And he coached them and dealt with their little life crises.
Yeah, kind of a latter day Room 222 with
with sports and.
That was very good with
Karen Valentine.
Valentine.
Yeah. Karen Valentine. Yeah, okay.
All right. I'm going to keep comparing the show to other shows I haven't seen.
Well, it's a latter day version. Okay. Very much like Mormonism.
Okay, so what did you think of this?
It was good, but it was very, very cliche. I mean, you know, the quarterback comes in and he's supposed to win it for everybody, and then he gets hurt, and the backup quarterback with not a lot of confidence then comes in and he wins the game in the last seconds on a big play. All the players are very cliche. You know, you have the star athlete, he's dating the head cheerleader, and those kinds of things. So it's good and it's interesting, but it doesn't really break new ground, which is what I think they were hopefully expecting from a show like that. I mean, it was hyped up the wazoo.
But we do have a brewing quarterback controversy in Odessa, and that's something for fans to look forward to over the course of the season.
That is.
It's Thank God.
Definitely, there is going to be some drama. You don't know if they're going to win or they're going to keep up their unbeaten streak.
Now, what about pure sitcoms? Now, I was looking in this week's copy of Entertainment Weekly, and there's a very interesting little timeline here, which I haven't had a chance to show the other folks. It talks about sort of the day when sitcoms ruled the earth, so to speak.
Sure.
Back in the 70s, a good example, 1975-1976, there were 16 sitcoms in the top 30, okay, including things like Laverne and Shirley. 1980-1981, there were 11 sitcoms in the top 30. 1985, that was The Jeffersons. 1985-86, there were 13 sitcoms in the top 30. That was Cosby and Family Ties. 1990-1991, that was sort of the sweet spot. There were 20 sitcoms in the top 30, including
wow.
Cheers and Roseanne. 2005-2006, how many in the top 30 do you think are sitcoms?
I'm going to go with zero based on the way you're leading me.
It's two.
Wow.
It's two. The New Adventures of Old Christine and Two and a Half Men. Those are the only two sitcoms in the top.
Both shows I haven't seen.
Yeah.
Second though.
Okay. Oh, well, great. So, but you don't have to have seen them in order to talk about this trend. As someone who's following television and the media, what do you relate this to?
Well, it's definitely since the end of the kind of Friends Seinfeld era, everybody was looking for the next big thing, and it never really came along. Everybody Loved Raymond was a big thing for CBS for a while, and that was the you know, golden
sitcom. Yeah, but I understand what didn't happen. What I'm trying to understand is why.
A lot of people got invested in reality TV shows and hour-long dramas. A lot of the CSIs and the Law and Orders took a lot of place and a lot of time on the network schedule from a lot of those because they just seemed to score better and make more money. I don't know if the hour-long drama makes more money than a 30-minute sitcom, and reality shows also, and those were really cheap and easy to produce. And we're kind of seeing the era of reality show lessen or get bumped to basic cable. There's a lot of reality shows now on VH1 and Bravo, and that's where those seem to be going. But the hour-long dramas seem to be sticking around. And so those worked, and that's what they went with. I don't know. Comedy has never really seemed to appeal to me so much. There seemed to be in the era of
That's unusual because you're someone that I consider to be genuinely funny. And when you read your writing, it's genuinely funny. If someone were going to say, of my friends, who would I most likely see writing a sitcom? I would put you on that list. I could see you in a writer's room writing a sitcom.
I appreciate that, but they've never really been that funny to me. I mean, Seinfeld was always good and always funny and, you know, good for a laugh, but it seemed like a lot. We used to sit around the TV and watch The Cosby Show as a family, or Family Ties and things like that. And the days of sitting around and everybody watching a show together have gone, and everybody's in their different rooms watching.
Well,
the
that's
different
interesting. That you, now, and, you're a mom. You've got that experience.
Absolutely, I've got one kid that wants to watch VH1 or. What is that show? Flavor Flav.
Flavor of Love.
Flavor Flav, or something like that. And then I've got another one that really doesn't watch that much television at all, and she's on MySpace. And then I'm in my room watching whatever I've recorded
on, the TiVo.
On my TiVo.
Right. You've got The Daily Show on the TiVo.
Mm-hmm.
What's interesting, because there does seem to be a conspiracy. I mean, there clearly is some kind of alchemy here that is changing things. There's the...
Alchemy, my friends.
Alchemy, my friends. There's some kind of a cultural tectonic shift. I mean, it's not just the economics of broadcasting and,
right.
and television producing that's changing things. Obviously, there would be some modification in that aspect of the business because of the emergence of reality TV.
Sure.
That explains how many shows are on the air. But what I find interesting is that numerically, the eyes watching the screen are finding so few sitcoms.
Mm-hmm.
There should still be some sitcoms out there and some sitcoms
to land on, right?
Right, and some sitcoms being praised. I don't know about any of you, but my experience is there is no sitcom water cooler show right now. There's no one is talking about The Old Adventures of New Christine around the water cooler.
No.
No one's talking about 2.5 Men.
Only how awful they are.
Right.
How hackneyed they are. And they're very hackneyed. I TiVo'd the New Adventures of Old Christine last night, and it was one sort of hackneyed comic thing after the other. Now, I have a theory about this. We've talked about this before, you and I don't know if we've talked about it on the air. My theory goes as this. In the heyday of situation comedies on television, those writers came from the writing rooms of your Show of Shows and The Tonight Show and The Jack Parr Show, the early days of variety, and the Larry Gelbarts and the Reiners and the Mel Brooks and the Woody Allens and all of those people. They were all folks who were comedy writers who were sort of educated by the Borscht Belt comedians, and they took that and they moved it on to a new medium, and they had this theory of comedy. They understood what comedy was all about. They then trained the next generation of folks, right, who then wound up doing things like Taxi and Cheers and Seinfeld. I mean, Larry David is not a guy in his 20s, right?
No.
Even Seinfeld's not a guy in his 20s.
No.
And the people who directed those things, right, Tom Posner, those are not people in their 20s. What we have now, though, is we have the next generation. We have kind of the spawn of the spawn of the spawn. And I think that they are abstracting from nothing. They don't have anything to abstract from. The original writers abstracted from vaudeville and Borscht Belt. The next generation abstracted from the variety show writers. The next generation abstracted from those original TV comedy writers. This generation is abstracting from an abstraction of abstraction. It's like making Xeroxes of Xeroxes of Xeroxes of Xeroxes. There's nothing there anymore. There's no reality left to abstract from. And so what you have is the form of a situation comedy. You know, the three of us in this room, Jason on the phone, we could write a half-hour situation comedy. It's 22 minutes. We could put in the laugh points. We could make it sound like a situation comedy.
All the beats.
Maybe get somebody to buy the stupid thing.
Right.
But where's the funny?
Right. It's a signifier of a signifier of a signifier of something so long ago that was the sign.
Exactly.
That, yeah.
Well, and expanding on that point, something that might have killed comedy for today is that in the 90s, after you had those guys who were all trained by the guys who were trained by the guys, we saw a lot of comedians with their own shows. You had Seinfeld, Roseanne, Jeff Foxworthy, Ray Romano, people like that. And after those guys, that seemed to be the formula. Okay, we're going to get a funny comedian and build a show around them. After that, there's nowhere really to go because you have to keep looking for the next comedian, and nobody seemed to come out to break out and be the next big one. And so after that, the whole kind of genre has kind of died a little bit since then. So there was no breeding ground to find those next shows.
Do you
they
have,
were all personality-based.
Do you have friends who are writing comedy?
I have one friend who writes for David Spade.
Okay, all right.
On Comedy Central.
Get him to come on our show with us. We can host the two of you guys in at the same time.
Okay, yeah. She's a female, and I'll get her.
All right, yeah. Get her on the show. I'd love to talk about what goes on in a writer's room at this point. Because
absolutely.
Because I think it'd be interesting.
She worked at Saturday Night Live before this. She was Tina Fey's assistant.
It'd be really interesting to talk about what's going on here. I mean, you see this abstraction now. I mean, it literally is eating their young to the point where Saturday Night Live didn't get as good ratings as Studio 60, which is an abstraction of Saturday Night Live. So maybe that's how it begins to resolve itself. I mean, the comedy skits on Studio 60 were more entertaining than this comedy skits on Saturday Night Live.
But we only saw like 5 seconds of each skit, and they were better. But I mean, it's
the
a lot
premises
easier to
were
do it five
the
seconds.
Premises were well. But you've hit the nail on the head. We only need to see 5 seconds. Most of the skits on Saturday Night Live are too fucking long.
Yeah.
And that's been the critique of them for, you know, 15 years now.
Well, I think it is interesting. The real question is, what is going to be the new introduction of the sort of generative force in comedy? Those guys who learned from the Borscht Belt guys, you know, they all went to college. Woody Allen is an educated guy, and what they took was the sort of Borscht Belt traditional, almost blue-collary comedy of the previous generation, and they combined it with an intellectualism that came from college. And that's, you know, that's what Barney Miller is about. That's what,
right.
You know, that's what that kind of
right.
era
Steve comic, Landisberg
yeah.
was kind of an erudite, unusual, exactly.
Right. And but where's that new force that's going to come in and cross-pollinate?
Right.
I wonder
well,
where
we
that
are,
is.
We are seeing a little bit of that in, you know, The Office and Scrubs and Arrested Development, this new genre of the, you know, non-laugh track, 30-minute, very witty, intelligent comedy.
But those aren't finding their audience. I mean, those are
exactly.
those are niche audiences.
The
I think they're funny.
They're not being supported.
Right.
They're not being supported.
I thought
and a lot of those writers come from, you know, the rooms of Conan O'Brien and stuff, the Yale School of writers, and
right.
Family Guy, Simpsons, and things like that. And those do well when they find their audiences, but they have a lot of trouble if the audiences aren't supporting them.
We got to go. It is randomshow.blogspot.com. You're still blogging?
I am.
Have you heard from
Oprah? Periodically.
Okay.
But I am.
All right, good.
No, I haven't heard from Oprah.
How's the job search going?
I had an interview this week.
Oh, yeah?
I'll tell more details about that as it becomes
something
clearer.
Something in media?
Something in media, yes.
Okay. So you're behind a microphone, and let me just take a guess. Does the job entail being behind a microphone and saying, that'll be $4.35, please drive to the front window?
I didn't want to spoil the surprise, but yes, it could have something to do with that.
Okay. That's a kind of media.
Look for me performing at drive-thrus near you.
All right, my friend. Listen, we love you. We want you to be well and take care of yourself, and... Randomshow.blogshot.com. Now, a little assignment for you. Next week, I'd like to talk about some of the daytime shows. Not the judge show so much as the Ellens and the newcomers, right? This Karen, the woman from Will and Grace, Megan Mullally.
Megan Mullally. Rachel
yeah.
Ray's got a new show.
Rachel Ray, Megan Mullally. Yeah, if you can.
I do have some interesting dirt on Rachel Ray, which you'll find very interesting.
Perfect. Perfect. So we'll talk about that next week.
Excellent. Sounds
outstanding.
Good.
All right. Thanks, my friend.
Bye, buddy.
Talk to you guys later.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye. All right. Very entertaining. So we had, during the break, there was a phone call that came in from Jan Karam. I don't know what the message said, so we'll have to listen to it. When we come back, we may be talking with Jan Karam, or we may be talking with Eliza Alfredfit, or we may be just talking among ourselves.
That's a world-class tease. Very good.
All good stuff.
That's good radio.
And the song we're going to play, this is the one song that does not come from the PodSafe Music Network today. I was talking to my friend this morning, Peter Alfredtig, Eliza's dad, Friggy,
right.
My good friend Friggy. Peter and I have known each other now for, I don't know, almost 25 years. I think we've been practicing law for about for the same amount of time. And he's a genius attorney. I mean, literally, he's a genius. And I'm doing a patent application. I don't do very many of them anymore. And so when I run into issues, I usually just contact him for free advice. And I sent him a little note about some stuff. And I said, by the way, I said, is there anything I need to do about this patent application? He's like, well, you know, you got that 19-month deadline if you want to file overseas. I was like, holy shit, because that's like tomorrow. I mean, it's like I went scrambling around. I got all nervous and shit like that. They got rid of the 19-month deadline in 2002, I think it is. So now I'm very nervous. First of all, my idol has fallen. So that's never a good thing. Second of all, I've been taking his advice for quite a while now. Anyhow, he mentioned that he listened to the show last week and he really enjoyed the music of Ken Turetsky. And
yeah.
And one of the things that he didn't know was that Dr. Demento was still around. And that he loved this song from Dr. Demento that Dr. Demento used to play all the time called Irving, The Ballad of Irving, the 142nd fastest gun in the West. And I said, well, if that is your pleasure, then it will be our pleasure to play it for you. So what we're going to do is we're going to play a little Dr. Demento Irving, the 142nd fastest gun in the West from Frank Gallup. Apparently this hit number 34 on Billboard in May 28th of 1966, but that was back when situation comedies were in that period. Something's different in the society. We're going to get to the bottom of it. Not necessarily today, but we got more podcasts to go. All right, so we'll play a little Irving. We'll come back. We'll be talking with someone, and we invite you to stick around. You're listening to Schnauzer Logic, Sherry Stevens, Sean Meehan, Robin Goldstein. Stick around.
Listen, gay boy.
Schnauzer Logic.
The Ballad of Irving. He was short and fat and rode out of the west with a Mogan David on his silver vest. He was mean and nasty right clear through, which was kind of weird because he was yellow too. They called him Irving. Big Irving. Big short Irving. Big short fat Irving. The 142nd fastest gun in the west. Irving. He came from the old bar mitzvah spread with a 10-gallon yarmulke on his head. He always followed his mother's wishes. Even on the range, he used two sets of dishes. Irving. Big fat Irving. Big sissy Irving. The 142nd fastest gun in the West. Irving. 141 could draw faster than he, but Irving was looking for 143. Walked in a Saul saloon like a man insane and ordered 3 fingers of 2 cents plain. Irving. Big fat Irving. Big sport Irving. The 142nd fastest gun in the West. Irving. One day, Bad Max happened into town. His aim was to shoot Fat Irving down. Bad Max said, draw and draw right now. And Irving drew a picture of a cow. Irving, big fat Irving, big gunfighter Irving. The 142nd fastest gun in the West. Irving. The James boys was coming on a train at first sun, and the town said, Irving, we need your gun. Well, that train pulled in at the break of dawn. Irving's gun was there, but Irving was gone. Irving. Big fat Irving. Big help Irving. The 142nd fastest gun in the West. Irving. Well, finally, Irving got 3 slugs in the belly. It was right outside the Frontier Deli. He was sitting there twirling his gun around, and Butterfingers Irving gunned himself down. Irving. Big fat Irving. Big dum-dum Irving. Big dum-dum dead Irving. The 142nd fastest gun in the West.
Really?
Serving the universe from the top of the Empire State Building.
Actually, it's a second bedroom with some bath mats taped to the wall.
And broadcasting loud to all time zones around the world in stereo.
It's a medium bitrate podcast. Oh, and it's mono.
This.
Schnauzer Logic!
Welcome back. We're 30 minutes into this episode of Schnauzer Logic, the podcast. Robin Goldstein, Sherry Stevens, Sean Meehan, Parvis Vitali is here in absentia.
That's a legal term.
Well, he should have been here. I mean, now that we're not thrilled, I got to put your name on the iTunes Music Store now.
Well, that would be nice.
Because I think you've done almost as many episodes as Parvis has. So I think we're going to have to put your name on the iTunes Music Store. So you'll show up now.
Cool.
So you'll be able to search for Sherry Stevens and you'll have your name there and it'll be part of the whole indexed iTunes thing.
Cool.
That'll be cool. That's a kind of identity. I don't know what the hell that means. Sorry. You were going to say something. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, we were talking. Sherry asked me about the Gilmore Girls.
Yeah.
Who watches the Gilmore Girls? And I said the Gilmore Girls came out in, you know, 5 years or so ago, right. when the WB was sort of at its zenith. They had those Joss Whedon shows, and they were big hits. People were following Buffy the Vampire Slayer, those kinds of programs. And I think that it may have even followed one of those Joss Whedon shows.
For all time. Right? Wasn't it Dawson?
Dawson's Creek. Creek.
Sorry. Open up the morning. Cole? Natalie Cole? Kim Cole? Old King Cole? Love Old Cole? I don't know. I'm trying to be funny. I don't have it together. We have a real guest. She's really funny. Ladies and gentlemen, I can't do her justice. We're going to let David Letterman do the introduction himself.
Our next guest is a very funny woman. She will be performing December 5th through the 11th at the MGM Grand Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas, Nevada. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Jan Karam. Jan...
How's that for applause? Keep it going for Jan Karam.
Yay.
How are you? I'm sorry.
Okay, I'm here in sunny Los Angeles.
Not now. It's nighttime.
It's still sunny. It's sunny 24 hours a day here because the party never stops.
Good times.
Hey, she's selling condos. She's selling condos.
Condos. Is this thing on?
It is. It's a little muffled, but it's we can hear you nevertheless.
Can you hear me? Is it really muffled?
It's kind of muffled, yeah.
Shoot.
Is it a real telephone or one of these things that they give you from Time Life for subscribing?
It's a Lego phone.
Is it really?
No, I don't know. Maybe I wasn't speaking into the little tiny microscopic pinhead hole that they give you to.
Well, I'm sorry I didn't get to you sooner today.
No problem at all. I thought I missed you.
When you called me earlier today, you were at an audition.
I was at an audition for a new MSNBC, I think. What do you call it? On the internet show. It's a gossip show, and it's a debate show for to talk about pop culture, what's hot and who's hot, and two people give their point of view, and I think the listeners or the readers or the viewers vote on it. That's the concept of that show. So I was auditioning for one of those people, and, you know, I have strong opinions about a lot of things. I'm just not sure if they're right. So.
well, obviously, were you required to give a preference on who was hot and who was not?
I didn't. They asked me about Bobby Brown and Whitney Houston, and I said that I didn't. They said, "What side do you take?" And I said, "I don't take a side. Is that still taking a side?" It is, right?
How is this different from the kind of shows that they have on VH1 and E! Television? And
I guess it's just that it would be people debating.
Okay.
And they would vote.
Well, that's interesting. So it's kind of like pop counterpop.
On the internet. Pop counterculture.
Nice.
What?
Pop counterculture. Yeah, that's kind of interesting, actually.
Yeah.
So did they actually have you debate against someone?
No, nobody was in there. I was as usual, debating against myself. I'll be filing for divorce on Friday.
Is it going to be acrimonious, or do you think that you can come to
it's
terms?
It's going to be sanctimonious.
She doesn't trust herself. She's hired a private detective to follow herself around. Thank you.
I take pictures with my cell phone. Okay.
So, I met Jan when I was doing Radio KSCO, and she was doing a lot of stand-up at that point, but she was moving into doing her one-woman show, which is how I got to spend more time with her, as she was staging her one-woman show, Reclining Nude in La Cienega down in Los Angeles.
And Robin was my runner. He went to the bank, and he bought Post-its, and then he put tacks up on walls and things like that.
I painted things white. I'm very proud to say that I painted things white, because the show involves Jan painting as she's doing a comic monologue. Is that fair?
Yes, that's exactly how it goes.
Okay, good. That's how you know I was there.
No, you were instrumental in getting it all done.
Yeah, E above high C.
Thank you, Robin.
But I remember Jan at one point, she has these big boards. It's like, this, everything has to be painted white for tomorrow's show. And so she goes, I'll be back in a couple of hours. And she left me in the back of some little place theater, with think behind HBO, with, you know, all by myself with like a roller and a bucket of white paint.
It was kind of a Huck Finn thing that actually got done.
Really, I was looking for the Indian, Injun Joe, or Curly Joe Besser, or someone to help me out there. But as you and I have been friends for these many years, it seems to me that you're doing more of these kind of auditions. We know that you were on ER last year, right? You've had other kind of roles.
Right.
Is that sort of a more interesting thing for you to do? Is it a more, how is it to make from going stand-up to doing more dramatic kinds of roles? Although obviously today was not a dramatic thing, nevertheless, it's not really stand-up.
Well, it was. I didn't get that many laughs. It was very good. It was dramatic, too. I'll be seeing my shrink on Friday, what else am I doing on Friday? Oh, the divorce, that's right.
Is it an easy transition?
No, it's not a transition. It's all part of the same thing, I think. That's how I look at it. It's just part of different colors of what I do. You know, it's all performing. So the one-woman show came out of stand-up, and I studied acting, so I can do the drama thing, and then the I do improvisation, so that's that MSNBC thing. I guess NBC. Does that go together? That was improvisation, just speaking off the cuff, and so that was today. So it's all part of the same. You know, hey, I'm just trying to get a job. I need a gig, man.
And do you see the same people when you go up for these auditions?
I'm sorry, it was PMSNBC. That's what I was.
Okay.
That's right. Well, I feel really cranky right now.
We'll edit that into the beginning, so it'll make more sense. What do you when you go out to audition? Mm-hmm. I mean, are there sort of people that you recognize? I don't mean the casting directors, but sort of the folks
are other unemployed people.
Yeah, but no. But I mean, have they cast you as a certain type? Like, I mean, are you going for the same kinds of roles? And you go, oh yeah, I saw you at the so and so audition. I saw you at the so and so audition.
Oh, generally, well, actually, sometimes does, and sometimes not. Like, say for today, there were men and women there, and there were different ethnic types, and so I think it's just the best woman or man wins. I mean, it's just like in those cases, they don't really know what they want.
Right.
They might want to go.
And is that frustrating for you? Because my guess is that's right on the point. I mean, that's probably exactly true.
Yes, I was very frustrated once. It was a shoo-in. I should have for sure gotten it. They needed a female stand-up comedian from Phoenix, Arizona, from a small mining town in Arizona with father issues. And I thought for sure I would have nailed that one, but
yeah,
they went with the other.
I booked that one. Sorry.
You guys don't know that's what I am and where I'm from, so that was my joke.
I've been ashamed.
I was going to slip in there, but coming from Massachusetts hurt you, didn't it?
I thought, okay, give me getting closer. Okay. So go ahead.
No. So, I mean, I'm curious about the process. When you go on an interview, we don't really talk very much about that. I don't want to make you nervous, and I don't want to jinx things and what have you. But
uh-huh.
I think people are interested in what that's all about, because it seems kind of mystical, and yet it's part of what you do for a living, right? It's part of your job search, right? It's your interviewing process for a job.
Right, exactly.
And so how do you get yourself in the mindset for that, and what's the process, and you know, how do you know when you know, and those kinds of things, and what kind of goes through your mind, or is it just old hat at this point, you just kind of show up and do your thing?
Yeah, that's how I prepare.
It's the Jason Nathanson School of...
Is there any correlation, though, in your mind between the times when you knew you had the job,
right,
and the times that you've actually gotten the gig? Do you have a good no? No correlation.
I have a good feeling, and then I don't hear anything. I mean, because it's just so, it's very, really arbitrary, and you think for sure you got it, like I said about the, and then they went another way, or they did a three-way. society captain. And I mean, hey, why didn't you call me? And I knew Larry and Jerry from New Stand Up in New York for Seinfeld, Jerry Seinfeld,
sure.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
And then they had me, they called me into audition. So I actually had auditioned 3 times, and the third time I went home traumatized because it's so hard to audition for somebody you know, and they're in the room, and the casting person, and you hung out with them in the clubs or had dinner with them. And
right.
Maybe even fondled,
Well, that's an interesting story.
And then you're in the room auditioning, and it's just awkward. So the third time I said, I can't, I'm never auditioning again. I went to the movie, to see a movie to get my mind off of it, and then when I got out, they said, there was a message on my...
Was it Punchline? Did you go see Punchline?
Yeah.
Tom Hanks.
Yeah. Ironically, it was Audition, actually.
Yeah, it was Punchline.
Sorry.
Oh, it was the Deer Hunter.
And that's why she's the pro.
Well, Punchline was a good start, Volley.
Okay. I'm Hacky McHackickstein, okay? So I don't get paid to do this. I do this for free. So that was a Seinfeld thing, but that was not your first sitcom, was it?
No, it wasn't.
And
I had a pilot with Nell Carter.
Right, right. Which is
God rest her soul.
Yeah,
and she was very nice, and so that didn't go though.
Oh, well, so interesting is I've seen that pilot.
You want to hear my thing?
Yes.
Okay. So I was like a secretary the receptionist or whatever it is at a Leonard's of Great Neck catering hall.
Mm-hmm.
So then, whenever people would call, I would be filing my nails. And then I would say, Morton's by the Bay, catering for all occasions. Yeah, of course we do weddings, sir. Uh-huh. Oh, yeah, your daughter would like a room with a view of the bay? Well, unfortunately, we aren't by a bay. I don't know. I guess they thought that Morton's by the discount liquor store didn't sound, you know, classy. That's how I got the job. That was my line.
Ah, applause.
That's
break.
Hilarious.
Well, you know, I've seen that sitcom, right? I was in a little production room with you once when you were going through that and pulling pieces off of that. And
right.
That would do well today. That's funnier than most of the shit that's on the air now.
I know.
Even with Nell Carter dead, that's a funnier sitcom. Cause
it's not funnier than 2 and a Half Men.
Who's dead on that show?
Wow. I think John Cryer's career. But seriously.
Exactly. You're Charlie Sheen.
Well,
I think it should be called No Men.
He's not really dead. He's just been so severely Botoxed that he's almost
John
in
Cryer?
Like a. No.
The kid.
It was for his own safety. It put him in a chemical coma.
And then the other one, we talked about this a little bit earlier. The other one is at 2 and a half Christines. that's the key to success. 2 and a Half is The New Adventures of Old Christine, which is horrendous.
Oh.
I think it's almost unwatchable, and yet
yet it's perversely compelling.
Not for me, it's not.
Oh.
Not for me, it's not. So what
like Gilmore Girls.
We were just talking about that.
I know, I heard. That's why I slipped that in there.
We're not talking. Okay, sorry.
Who watches it?
So
my question exactly.
So what's happened with sitcoms?
Sitcoms today? I don't think nothing. I mean, I don't think anything has happened. Nothing. It's the same. Don't you think? What? Something exciting is happening, something new. For a while there was hope with HBO and Curb Your Enthusiasm and I guess all the sort of semi-reality.
Right, Lisa Kudrow show, right? And
Curb Your Enthusiasm, that's not scripted and improv. He sets up the scene how
Right.
And then they improvise it kind of how the way they want it to go, but not really, not a script per
right.
se. And, you like Entourage?
I do like Entourage, but it's kind of like cotton candy. I mean, there's no substance there.
Right.
It's just, you know, it's a bunch of pretty people, and so it's
right.
kind of entertaining to watch it. I don't know that it's particularly well written. I think that what's his name? The guy that plays Ari Gold. Piven. Jeremy Piven.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he's compelling to watch.
Yeah.
I think actually the cast is compelling. So
yeah.
I think that that's a situation where the cast rise above the material. Because I don't think the material is all that interesting. They're kind of marginally interesting setups. But the cast are compelling people. And so I would watch them interact with each other if they were just kind of hanging out and doing a podcast. I'd watch that because they're such different personalities that the chemistry is interesting.
Right.
The situation is not... the comedy is not in the situation. It's
okay,
just...
Okay, so now that's a perfect example of this PSNBC show.
Now you fucked yourself up.
PMSNBC, that's a perfect thing. You just did a rant. You had a strong point of view. And now, people, please vote right now. We need your votes, and then we're going to see if you won.
But most people's opinions are not that interesting. That's the big...
That's the difference. You have an interesting opinion.
Thank you. But I think that's the challenge. That
opinions happens. Are... Oh, no, never mind.
All right. Well, whatever. We're talking with Jan Karam for people who may not recognize the voice.
Hi, everybody.
And Jan, of course, is maybe single best known as Sandy, the girl that wouldn't laugh at Jerry's jokes on...
That's funny.
Seinfeld? Is that...
Okay. That was my line.
I know. But
hi,
I mean,
podcasters. Can I cast your pod? Oops.
Yeah, but she's funny, really. Trust
that,
me.
That was from the short-lived Jan's Reasons Why Not. And,
Two and a half Jans and the new adventures of old Jan. But, I mean, you've been animated in Dr. Katz, and, you know, you've done Politically Incorrect, and, you know, you've done basically every talk show that's out there.
Letterman.
We nice played your show. Intro to Letterman and Carson and, you know...
Arsenio.
Is he still alive?
And HBO Young Comedians.
And that, of course, is...
On.
Yes? Is that running
is he
now?
Is still alive, Arsenio?
Yes.
Yeah.
I was afraid gum disease got him. He had some kind of periodontal problem that might...
With Dennis Miller, that was actually a fairly a fairly auspicious Young Comedian special, and that's one of the things I wanted to talk to you about. At the time that you were in the clubs doing stand-up comedy, at that point in your life and in your career,
mm-hmm.
were the other people that you were doing stand-up comedy with, did you consider them to be friends? Were they merely acquaintances? Were they competitors? How did you view them? What was the dynamic at that point?
Well, you know how it is. I guess you're all trying to get the same thing, so not too friendly. But I think when I first started out, we were more friends. We'd hang out in coffee shops because we were just doing and talk and make think of jokes and what about this idea and what about that idea. So it was more of that kind of camaraderie in the beginning.
And when does that change?
It changed when David Spade did my material on... Saturday Night Live.
Is that right?
Oh yeah.
I don't know that story. What?
Well, yeah, and also I watched. He always used to imitate me, and.
Well, he's from Arizona too, isn't he?
He's from Arizona, so there were four of us there, and he would copy all of us, and you know, some other comedians and do parts of their act or mannerisms, pick up mannerisms because he was a little bit younger,
right.
or started later. So, and then when he came to the clubs all the time and he'd watch me and do my act, he goes, I love this bit, I love that bit. And he says, I love the new phone bit that you're doing. And then I came into the improv in Santa Monica and he was doing it on stage, word for word.
Wow.
And I said, oh my God, if you ever do my stuff again, I pointed my finger at him. And then then he said, why, what'd I do? And I said, you did my bit, word for word. He says, what? No, I didn't. I go... And then he said, well, I'll help you get on Saturday Night Live to make it up to you or something. But what preceded that was that he had, you know, the that looks really good. You should cinch it. You should belt it. If you should cinch it, they would say it. The Gap Girls.
Okay.
That he took that. That was for me. And he told me he did. I said, that's my thing. He goes, I know, but I needed something for the show. And that's when he offered to help get me on the show, but never came through.
Wow.
You know the Gap Girls? And they would go, that was really good.
Yeah.
I had the thing where I would say, no matter, you go.
Yes, of course.
The store and the sales girls, sales girls, no matter what you try on, they always say the same thing. That looks really good. You should get it. And then, but it doesn't really fit. And they go, that's okay. You can belt it.
I didn't put that together. You did that with Sandler and, sure, I remember that.
Yeah, and then
that.
They would say, they did the Gap Girls, and
right,
the Gap Girls
right.
is really a thing of that. And do I sound bitter, hostile, or
no, it's a
or
beautiful,
too forthcoming?
It's
no.
a beautiful Boulevard of Broken Dreams story. It's inside stuff. I like it.
Yeah. No, I don't think you sound bitter
but
at
I
all.
I think they changed it to you should cinch it.
Well, but doesn't matter. I mean, it was your basic premise.
Belt,
it was the,
cinch, beat.
It was the punch premise. Right, exactly. Exactly. So, I mean, is that what does it? Does eventually every comedian steal from every other comedian, and then that just destroys the relationship?
No, they don't. There are a lot of comedians.
You've stolen from me.
Wait, was your thing is Lebanese, the new 40. I said, because when the war happened a month ago or so, then not to make it sound casual, not to be casual about it, but then I said, I'm Lebanese, so that's, you know, very popular, and you said, Lebanese, the new 40. I said, I'm going to use that.
Yeah.
And what else have I? The whole
OnStar thing and the OnStar.
I did the OnStar.
And the movie phone? Welcome to.
I did that.
Welcome to movie phone.
Yeah.
Where would you like to see? Missoula, Montana. Honey. And Jen was like, oh, wait a second, I'm going to write this down.
I wrote it down.
At least she's honest about it. I'm just going to write it down.
I got permission, so it wasn't
you
really
did,
stealing.
On this podcast, I give you 1,000% permission for anything that we ever do. If I say something that's funny and you can use it in your act and make people laugh with it, I'm okay with that because I'm not doing this for a living. So as far as I'm concerned, I'm just writing material for you.
Right.
It's just that most of it you can't use.
Most of it isn't funny, exactly. But
it's how we protect our stuff.
Exactly.
Water it down.
It's kind of like copy protection for comedy.
It is.
I lay a patina of not funny on top of it, and then you need the key
you
to unlock it.
You can't decrypt it. You can't decrypt for comedy.
So what kind of things are you working on right now? We're running a little long today, so I want to move on to the...
Let's get to the funny.
No. I mean, we'll have you back again. It hasn't been possible.
I'm doing extra. I added 5 more pounds to my squat routine in the gym.
Okay, good times.
No, and let's see, what am I working on? Oh, well, I finished writing my book.
How cool!
Published by an unknown publisher.
So have you secured a publisher or you're
I have not
shopping
secured.
It around right now? Okay.
Yeah.
But people can read some of your writing on your website.
A couple of short stories on my website.
Which is www.
I do have an agent, and my agent is shopping that book.
Cool.
And I'm trying to get the one-woman show. I plan to put the one-woman show up again. And
it's got to go up again.
I know. God, I hope I get it. Oh, God, I need this job. I really need this job. I've got to have this job. That's not good.
Is that from Chorus Line?
And then and another 100 people just got off of the train, and the train and the bus. All right, now I'm dragging myself up.
I was
a musical theater major in college.
I think that we should have a musical theater where all of the parts are called in over a phone. So it all is this kind of weird, hollowy sound, and it'll only be available as a CD, but I like that idea.
I like it, too. How many listeners, or whatever you call it, what do you call the people that listen? Do they listen? Are they viewers? Are they watching?
Fools. We have about 1,000 people a week that listen to the show.
A week now?
Uh-huh. Yep.
Wow.
It's about 1,000 people a week that listen to the show, yeah.
Gosh,
yeah.
Great.
So you've just embarrassed yourself in
I know.
In front of 998
How
more
many
people.
Nights a week?
We do it once a week for two
once
hours.
Once a week for 2 hours. Okay.
Wow. It's like I just said that.
That hurts.
well, www.jancarum.com. We'll put the link on our webpage. People can go see what you're up to over there. And
you don't have to say the www because your listeners should know.
They should. I know, but I like to. I like the way the W's feel on my lips.
Oh, okay.
I like the way that it feels. It's all about honesty and connecting with the audience.
Yes, exactly.
You want to go back up to Fairbanks?
Did you tell them that we went to Alaska?
I at some point I may have.
You still have your Valentine, your balloon?
I still have my Valentine balloon. We'll have to talk about that at some other time.
Okay, goodbye, everybody.
I'm sorry I got to you late, but thanks for sharing stories.
Nice,
we got more stories. We'll talk to you soon, all right?
Okay.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Bye.
Got to do that like Len Tillum.
I didn't know that about David Spade.
No.
Now, here's what I think is interesting. Jason said that his friend writes for David Spade.
Oh, that's right.
Maybe we can get...
Ooh.
Wouldn't that be fucking cool?
Celebrity deathmatch.
I wonder if we can get David Spade on here. That would have like 1,010 listeners. I mean, this is the best fucking show that nobody's hearing. I mean, you guys are hearing it, but but this is the best show that nobody's listening to.
Right, which is not to say you're nobodies.
No, but I mean...
You're somebodies.
Yeah. You saw the map on the webpage.
Yeah.
I mean, they're all over the world. 1,000 listeners is terrific for a podcast. But what Michael Zwirling said earlier in the show is what everybody says, which is, holy shit, that was like better than most of the morning shows that I... It was like, yeah, thanks. We'd love to actually make a living doing this, but apparently we're... No, so... I like what you got going on with the headphones things there. You're just pumping it straight into the...
Right. I'm going right into the cortex.
All right. So we're running long, but because this is a 30th anniversary show, can you hang a little longer?
Of course I can.
And I'm thinking we're just going to keep doing this. Maybe we'll run a little long. So we're telling our affiliates up and down the line that we're running a little long today because I want to talk to Eliza Alfretic.
Absolutely.
So we're going to try to get her on the line. We'll play a little bit more tunage. We'll come back. We'll talk with Eliza, and we'll have some more fun. You were listening to Schnauzer Logic, Robin Goldstein, Sean Mee, and Sherry Stevens had to leave. Want to say thank you to Sherry Stevens.
Absolutely.
A good, dear friend of mine who had a little birthday party for me at her place. And
it was fabulous.
She's just a love and a wonderful woman, and she was going to go give her car to her daughter. Her daughter's now driving age. They're sharing a car. This is the beginning of the end. All right, so we'll come back and we'll be talking to Eliza Alfred. You're listening to Schnauzer Logic. Robin Goldstein, stick around.
That's the trouble around here. Talk, talk, talk. Oh, sometimes I think I must go mad.
We'll be back with more Schnauzer Logic.
Summer's day in Shepherdstown, an eagle in a thermal is a circle now, like a tire on a bike rolling down Columbus Street. But Katie got a little look of hope in her eyes, and her arms unfold, and she looked to the skies and said, I'm gonna learn to fly around with you, yeah. She jumped up high, she fell on the ground and skinned her little knee and made a horrible sound. She got right up and she tried it again, and smiling all the way with her unstoppable grin. Well, take time, do what you're gonna do, and just smile, you're gonna see it through. Your wings are gonna sprout and lift you off the ground. Take time, do what you're gonna do, just smile, you're gonna see it through. Your wings are gonna sprout and you will learn to fly. All the other children used to laugh at her. They say your head is in the clouds, and when you come back to earth, the men in the white coats, they will all be waiting for you. But Katie knew that there was something they didn't see, and she climbed up to the top of the sycamore tree and said, look out world, I am gonna fly away. She stood so tall, and with all her might she took a flying leap with an astonishing height. A wind blew through and it carried her high, and Katie knew that she was just beginning to fly. Well, take time, do what you're gonna do, and just smile, you're gonna see it through.
your wings are gonna sprout and lift you off the ground. No, no, take time, do what you're gonna do. Just smile, you're gonna see it through. Your wings are gonna sprout and you will learn to fly. Gonna do it, just smile, you're gonna see it through, and your wings are gonna sprout and lift you off the ground. No, no, take time, do what you're gonna do, just smile, you're gonna see it through. Your wings are gonna sprout and you will learn to fly. Well, take time, do what you're gonna do, and just smile, you're gonna see it through. Your wings are gonna sprout and lift you off the ground.
We feel that in every way, this new radio series offers an unusual opportunity to combine broad popular appeal with truly distinguished radio treatment.
Oh, and this one time, at band camp, I stuck a flute in my pussy.
Frisco!
Hello?
This is Schnauzer Logic.
Welcome back. We're 2 minutes and 2 seconds. We're at Chuck Willery time. 2 and 2. Back. We're at the 2 hours and 2 minutes into the... not really the second hour. I guess it's the second, third hour. We're starting on the third hour of Schnauzer Logic. It's our 30th show. We should have Eliza Alfrichting on the phone, but instead I think we got a little of this. You hear that?
Oh, yeah.
As a sound of progress. It's also the sound of annoying somebody at a Harvard dorm room.
Which is something I like to do any time of day or night.
I'm wondering if I just, like, punch a different number down. Whether I get, like, a different, like, a room next door.
Right.
Well, you kind of talk a little bit here. I'm going to try to... I'm not giving up so easily.
You know, that's something I have always admired about Robin. The perseverance. And the willingness to annoy college children at any age. Which... is something I think we both learned from Mark Foley. In any case, I think all I really have to say here is that leaving the show, I'm making an enormous sacrifice to be here, particularly when the show runs long, because there is a treacherous and narrow traffic artery that leads from the studio here at Schnauzer headquarters back to my residence. I live on the coast of California. I live in Santa Cruz, California. We are in Los Gatos, California right now. And I have to go over a pass through these coastal mountains to get me back to my home. It is raining. Now, this is the first day of real rain.
Hello?
Hello?
Hi. Do you know Eliza Alfrichting?
No, I'm afraid I don't.
Did we wake you? I'm sorry.
Who is this?
This is Robin Goldstein, Schnauzer Logic. It's a radio show in California. We were looking for Eliza, but I think we got you by mistake. Is it possible? Can we put you on the air?
That's okay. I'd rather not be on the air.
Okay. Are you a Harvard student?
Yes.
Okay. Well, sorry to bug you, and we won't put you on.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Have a good one.
Bye-bye.
He lost his shot at fame.
I know. But I'm not done. Keep talking. I got an idea now. We obviously are close. We're just gonna
keep juggling numbers until we find someone. Well, there you go. In any case, today is the first day.
You're never too old to make prank phone calls.
No. No. If we just had hand puppets, we'd have a show. We'd be on Comedy Central. Well, here it goes.
Another ringer. Oops, sorry.
That's okay.
No, you can talk. It's
No, this is...
The number you have reached has been disconnected. You may call 493-1000 to check if there is a new listing.
That's a Harvard accent. That's a Boston Brahmin accent there. All right. You were saying.
No, I was fascinated by that, and I even felt as I said, ooh, like Tiger Woods' putt had just rolled around the cup and failed to go in. Ooh. Oh, that's going to hurt. In any case, my drama is about the meteorological induced trauma that I'm going to experience as I drive home tonight. This is a twisty, nasty little road that they are doing road work on. Locally, it's pretty infamous. It's called Highway 17. It's a narrow little two-lane artery, and
we'll just see if anybody answers. Go ahead. Okay. You're good. You're talking about 17.
17.
The drama of 17.
The drama of 17. And the drama of 17 is intense, particularly when the summer wastes, the summer deposits, the jetsam.
Is it silt?
I don't know what it is, but there's some sort of accretion of stuff on the road. And when it first rains...
Hi, we're looking for Eliza Alfrichtig. Do you know her?
I don't know. Who are you looking for?
Eliza Alfrichtig?
Is she in her own house?
I'm not sure. Did we wake you up? I'm sorry.
No, you didn't. It's just my voice is low. I'm in Adam's house.
Okay.
I'm not a student. This is a guest suite.
Ah, I see.
So, I don't know. So I can tell you.
We're just kind of randomly calling around to see if we can find her.
My number is...
Well, we've got your number, so I don't want you to give it out. So.
Oh, okay.
All right. Well.
Well, I hope you find her. I don't know. You could try the superintendent's office. Would he know?
I don't know.
Because they know a lot.
So they have a guest. They have a guest room.
I would think they should.
Okay.
I mean, they might have a guest list.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
That makes sense. All right.
So try that.
I promise. Thank you. Bye bye.
Part of the new NSA tracking program, they're working with local superintendents to keep track of all the Habibs and what have you that might be coming into the guest suites.
Yeah, I'm not going to make any more calls. I want to, but I'm nervous now.
You're scared. What if the superintendent gets wind of this?
Exactly.
You could be in big trouble, my friend.
So it's raining out. Is that what you're talking about?
It is raining, and it's our first real day of rain. And
misting.
That accretion, that gunk.
You just like that word.
I do. I'd like to rub myself in some accretion and just... But anyways,
I like
it
accretion
rises.
Formula myself. 16.
The wet head is dead, my friend. The in any case, it makes the road slippery, and they're working on 17 right now. So the road is treacherous because of obstacles and you know sand trucks and what have you. And they save the work for the evening because this is a major artery to a bedroom community of San Jose. Santa Cruz is sort of not it's not a real place. Santa Cruz is a little fake place that exists, at least at the size it exists, because of its connection to San Jose, Santa Clara, Silicon Valley. So this road has to stay open during the day. They can't be messing around with the lanes and stuff, but at night...
Oh, so at night.
At night. Ooh, it all changes. It's spooky like a horror film. It's all different at night, and now it's going to be different and slippery.
Well, so you'll have to just drive carefully. You'll have to drive slowly.
Oh, it's crazy talk. What are you...
Sorry, I don't know what I was thinking about. Oh, man. I think next week Critical Chip is going to be sitting in with us.
That would be outstanding.
Which is really kind of cool. So we're hoping that we'll have him for next week's program. So as long as we've got some time, since we don't have Eliza on the line, a few updates for our listeners. People want to know. First of all, we have not been updating the blog on a regular basis because I just don't really have the time to do it. It takes all of my energy to get, not my energy, but it takes all of my time to get the show put together. And then I've been very, very busy. So I apologize for not getting the blog up.
And then when Fergie scares the crap out of you and you have to do the research to realize then that he was wrong, that also takes time away from the blog, doesn't it?
It does. It does indeed. So, but anyhow, we're going to, I don't even know what I'm talking about. Oh, yes, updates. So, MSNBC, so XM on MSNBC. All right. So, an interesting thing happened this week. They started a new channel on XM Comedy, on XM Satellite Radio. I mean, we knew that Oprah was coming. They now have a National Lampoon Radio Comedy Channel. So they were clearly needed the bandwidth. So all the talk about they're out of bandwidth, that was more corporate horseshit. And it makes me so crazy that nobody would be honest enough to say, hey, listen, we got a better deal. We got a higher bidder that I want to put out a press release, you know, through the PR web that says basically to all of the shareholders of XM who it was announced today in Inside Radio that, you know, they're losing subscribers. They're not able to hold on to subscribers. What happens is you buy a car, it has XM or Sirius turned on, right? And they've been counting all of those as subscribers. Sirius has been playing big time number games with those subscribers as, oh, I got all these cars in the lot, they're all turned on, therefore they're subscribers. When those free subscriptions expire, people are not renewing. They're not ponying up the bucks. And so their numbers are beginning to drop. At a time when their life, when you figured their numbers should be going up, their numbers are dropping. Well, XM already had three comedy channels. One more than Sirius. Sirius, I think, had two comedy channels. There's like an adult comedy channel and a family comedy channel. XM had that. Then because they did a deal with XM Canada, the Canadian government required them to have Canadian content. So they decided an easy way to do that was to put on Canadian...
Road Stories on the Road Stories channel.
Non-stop, my friends, over and over again. Road Stories, pick me up! Funny, ha-ha, stiff. Now, they've added a fourth fucking comedy network, this National Lampoon Radio Network. I tuned it in. Now, are you old enough to remember the National Lampoon Radio Hour?
Oh, yeah.
That was, in its time, genius comedy.
It was very cutting edge.
Very a kind of Monty Python, mm-hmm. Very Fire Sign Theater, but National Lampoon... I mean, I haven't laughed at National Lampoon since Chevy Chase was funny, okay? I mean, that's how long ago it's been. That was a joke I was working on all week long, and I fucking blew it. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. Let's get Jan back here to punch that up, because that's what I need. But, I mean, National Lampoon, do you think of National Lampoon as being a comedy label, a comedy...
No, I no longer associate it with the premier comedy.
Cutting edge premier comedy.
No, I don't. I think the last time I laughed at anything had to do with the Traveling Wilburys. I think they had a piece on the Wandering Dingleberries.
Okay.
So what are we talking, 1988?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, really, that's the last time that, you know, their moniker is tarnished.
So somebody,
without doubt.
I mean, they've been bought and bought and bought and through, and I don't even know who owns the radio part of it at this point, but I looked at the list of advisors. Now they've got Belzer on there. Belzer was part of the original National Lampoon Radio Theater, right?
And
the
it folks, showed.
And it made a big difference. I mean, he was brilliant stand-up and improv and really dark, cutting-edge kind of stuff. But the rest of it, it's all radio guys.
Hey, what's funny this morning? We're going to play a little Dane Cook.
And Dane Cook is not funny. I mean, no one... I've heard Dane Cook say funny things. I think he's a comedian. But his comedy is not explain the mammoth people that are listening to him. I saw him on Saturday Night Live. It was, again, it was almost unwatchable. This week's episode of Mad TV made fun of Dane Cook. They said, coming up, you know, our exclusive Dane Cook. And then they had I forget what his name is, the first guy on the, you know what I'm talking about?
I haven't kept up with the cast.
Yeah. But he did a Dane Cook impression. And he did basically, you know, black background, you know, a single spot. And it's like, you know, I'm going to tell my girlfriend that if she doesn't listen to me, I'm going to punch her in the face. And he would like turn around and mug at the camera, you know, and it's like Dane Cook, he's outrageous. You know, it's like, right. That's the deal. There's no funny there.
No,
not that he can't be a funny guy. I'm sure that he's a funny guy, but that's not what's going on here. Same thing. These are the people that think Dane Cook is funny enough to carry a show. There's no creativity there. And so MSNBC has decided that, I mean, XM has decided that it's more important to run four comedy channels than to have what is really the most cutting edge cable news channel right now. I mean, The interviews that Matthews is doing, Chris Matthews, thank God, and who knows how fucking long it's going to last, has gotten off of his kind of Republican...
We're
all neocons horse, and he's actually asking some tough questions. And Keith Olbermann, I mean, he's really the poor man's Edward R. Murrow, but he has commentaries that make you think. They make you think because they're pissing off Republicans. So at the very least, he's another voice in the wilderness. I mean, Michael may decide that, you know, running Air America is not such an important thing and it's okay not to be with it, but that's going to hurt the area. I mean, there are people that don't have computers that listen to Air America on KSCO, and I don't know where they're going to get the station right now.
No, it's not available locally in any kind of significant amount. I think that there are some local stations that are affiliates to the extent that they carry a little bit of the weekend programming, a little smattering of the late night programming.
Right.
But they don't actually use it as their core daylight
hour drive.
The
Sam Cedar, the Al Franken, the Randy Rhodes. Exactly.
Yeah, they don't carry that stuff, and it will be missed. But And this is nothing against Michael.
No.
He gets to program any way he wants.
Sure.
There was never a real commitment to that. I think that there was a certain desire on the part of Michael. For those of you who don't know, Michael, and I think he would agree with this, is an arch conservative.
Yes.
And there was a certain desire to see Air America fail. I think that at least there was sort of a Jungian shadow desire. If that was not the expressed desire, there was a certain level of joy. And you can see that because he contacted Rush Limbaugh during the period of initial failure to get sponsorship for the programs, to sell airtime, what he calls getting sponsorship.
Yes.
And he and Rush were in contact, and Rush joked about Air America's failure in Santa Cruz, largely on the basis of Michael's encouragement.
Right.
And so that's a complicated
story. Of course, Rush
story.
Also joked the other day about how the Democrats really wanted in on a little bit of Foley's action with the young boys. And he laughed about that.
Yeah.
Rush is a pig. He is a foul, disgusting human being. At the beginning of his career, I was amused by some of his antics because I thought that this was actually kind of shtick.
Mm-hmm.
But I think as his ratings have dropped, he's decided to retrench and regroup and become more Savage-like, Michael Savage-like. And he is a vile, foul human being.
He is. There's something wrong at the core.
To say something like that, to decide that the way to go after your enemies, which he clearly considers the Democrats to be, is to liken them to pedophiles, right? To say that they would want in on that. It would never occur to me that to say that the reason that the Republicans were going after Clinton was because I really wanted a piece of a Lewinsky. Because my mind doesn't work that way.
No. But I think that they are frustrated with this scandal. I think that they are frustrated in, you know, we were talking about this at the beginning of the show, the scandal hurts Republicans in a deep way. There's been a lot of talk among liberals lately about whether this scandal will stick or not, as so many previous scandals have not. The Tom DeLay scandal, the Abramoff scandal, there have been a zillion scandals over the last few years that haven't seemed to fire the public's imagination. But this is the kind of scandal.
Yeah,
I think it's because thievery, that kind of, you know, paying for votes, that kind of thing, those are financial transactions. I think we're not only cynical about them, but you can even be a little romantic about them.
Sure.
You know, it takes a thief. There are some kinds of crimes that actually have a, you know, to use your term, a patina of romance. But there's no "it takes a perv." You know, I don't recall that in the Hitchcock canon.
I think the CW, it's one of the, it's in Turnaround.
A little known Hitchcock classic, you know, Judy, where's your son? You know, you don't see that. You don't.
And thank God for that.
Yeah. I think that this is alarming to them, and I think that what they're left with at this point is to just insinuate that this is a bipartisan problem. If you remember when the Abramoff thing came out, there was a similar technique. I don't think it was as urgent, but a lot of people were saying, yeah, but you know, it's a two-party problem, when of course clearly it wasn't.
Right.
Now I think...
And speaking of Abramoff, just to detract you, to sidetrack you for just a half a second, the president, of course, you know, repeatedly said that he had no meetings with him, and, you know, and then, of course, they say found photographs. But recently, right, they've uncovered diaries that show, you know, multiple contacts. So this is these are outright lies.
Yeah.
This is not spin.
No. There is...
This is like, I'm not touching you. It's like, your finger is on my body. You
right.
are touching me.
Yeah, this is counterfactual.
Thank you. I like to think of it as a lie, but, you know, I'm a small town kid.
It's true. There's no way. Obviously, these records, these fairly impartial records, have emerged, and they show an enormous connection between the White House and Abramoff. They
right.
show many, many more connections, much more frequency in the visitation.
Oh, sure.
And I think we all understood that, but it is interesting to watch people move from spin to lying.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we've seen
right.
over the last year or so, I think. We've seen a retreat on the part of Republican leadership from spinning ambiguous data, threatening but ambiguous data, to out-and-out lying and hoping no one catches them. And part of the problem, I think, with the loss of an outlet like Air America is, with few exceptions, there aren't a lot of people looking to catch them.
No.
For whatever reason, the press is not functioning as a watchdog any longer, and there are all sorts of suspicions about mm-hmm. why that is. Is it their corporate, owners? Is it they need access? Is it, you know, is it a cultural problem? Is it an economic problem? We don't know. But the fact of the matter is, they don't serve as watchdogs.
Right. I think that's true. And so when you have a channel like MSNBC, which, well, what's interesting is it didn't used to be particularly progressive. And I'm not sure that I would consider Scarborough to be particularly progressive or even Matthews to be progressive or the bow tie guy that got rid of the bow tie, Tucker Carlson. These are not progressives, but they've managed to attract the kinds of guests that were on CNN in its more of its glory days, and the discussions are more reasoned. And I think I mentioned they had Al Franken on a week ago, and he was on Tucker Carlson's show, and he was going at someone, and they didn't cut him off.
No,
they let him make one after the other cogent point, and basically just cut the knees out of this, you know, Republican hack. And I have friends who listen to the show, and they're Republicans, and I don't mean that every Republican is a hack, because I think we can have a legitimate difference of opinion on the economic future, what the best way is to handle things like retirement and health care, and, you know, I believe that. And I'm not sure that I think the government should be a big brother in all of these things. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about the abuse of power. And how the current administration has taken it to an extreme that I don't think we've seen in our lifetime.
I certainly haven't. I mean, you and I are too young to have lived through the 50s House on American, you know, House
right.
Committee on...
HUAC, yeah.
Yeah. But I didn't live through that. I was very young with Nixon. But my recollections and my later readings of, you know, Nixon-era materials and critiques clearly indicates that they thought that they were on the verge of a constitutional crisis
right.
about 50 miles back from where we are now. You know, they thought they were coming off the map.
Yeah.
Way, way back. Four rest stops back.
Because that was
back.
All pre-Watergate, pre-all these other things, right? So
right.
their threshold was much lower now.
Yeah.
I think we've been inured to a lot of this, which is unfortunate. But as a result of this, I think losing MSNBC is a particularly hard-charging blow, and replacing it with a comedy channel. I had more respect when they said the sound quality of the other channels is suffering. Something has to go. We've decided we've got one too many channels. We need that bandwidth. But to take that off and replace it with more stand-up, it couldn't be any more Brave New World, Soma, 1984. I mean, the examples, they slap you in the head.
No one's going to pay attention, or not enough people will. And I think they count on that, and I think they're right to.
Yeah.
In essence, they are right to say that when it's been the story of this administration, it's been the story of big
the corporatocracy over the last decade or two, we're going to tell an initial lie.
Mm-hmm. The big lie.
The big lie. And even if it is shown, it is demonstrated in some quarter to some small number of people that it was in fact a lie after the fact, it is demonstrated. It won't really matter because by that time people will have moved on. They don't care. The fact we lied about the bandwidth, you know, that was just a story. What difference does it make? And people, I think you're right, they're inured to it. They're going to say, you know what, it's big business and we kind of got screwed out of something. Oh, well.
We got almost 1,000 signatures on the petition. It's stalled out at 940-something, 950-something. I don't know. It's right around 1,000 signatures on the petition. There is somebody at XM Radio who is actually a proponent, as Scott Waterman. I don't remember now. I'm once again the Jason Nathanson School of Preparation showed prep. But anyhow, Scott had told a couple of folks that he was actually thought that maybe they could find room for at least the afternoon shows, little share channel stuff. And so people have been contacting him. So there's at least some lip service being paid to trying to get some of those shows back on the air. But I don't know. I don't know why it's not so incredibly obvious that they go, really, we need 4 fucking comedy channels, but we can't, we don't have room for another news. I mean, for what's a news, an important news channel where newsmakers are going on and talking about things.
But they're doing battle with Sirius, and Sirius only has 2. So they're, you know.
More comedy.
More comedy. You want to laugh? Sirius gives you 2 laughs to hour 4.
I found a new rendition of Mission to Moscow.
You're kidding.
Here, it's a little different. It's a modern rendition. This is from the iTunes Music Store. Because, you know, it was originally done by Benny Goodman and the Glenn Miller Orchestra, and one we have was done by Zoot Sims and Phil Woods. But I've not found anyone who used the same chart. This is the same chart. This is the Johnny Varro Swing 7 with Randy Sankey on tenor sax, I'm guessing. And this is available from the iTunes Music Store. So I thought we'd mix it up a little bit. Have this for the closing music.
I love it.
And then use the original for the opening tunage. If you go to the webpage, by the way, at www.schnauzerlodge.com, you can see a photograph of me in high school. It was 30-something years ago, I think, behind the microphone doing the morning show with Len Koch. I look almost identical. It's so interesting to me. I mean, if you look at that photograph and the little half face in the top of the page, you go, well, it's clearly the same person. I mean, it's so interesting. And this is part of my DNA because it hasn't changed. I'm just having more fun now.
The headphones are better.
They are better. Nancy Nangeroni had me on the last episode of Gender Talk this last week. So that was really terrific. We love her. And go over to gendertalk.com and check out that show. Ethan St. Pierre did a 2-hour interview with me on his show on Trans FM. No break. No music.
Holy cow.
Just 2 hours.
March.
it was the Bataan Death Pod March. So thanks to Ethan, you can catch that. What's interesting is he didn't promo it beforehand, and he's already got next week's show listed. So maybe it might have been good in theory, but I kept thinking, don't you take a break, dude? Don't you want to tell people what they're listening to? Nah, it's okay. We're just going to push on through. So thanks to Ethan. Thank you to you. 30 big shows.
It's been great.
Thanks to Michael Zwirling for being our guest today. Jan Karen for being our guest today. Jason Nathanson, who was outstanding. We miss Parviz. Sherry Stevens, who sat in. We're loving her. Here is our...
I enjoy having you. Yeah. She's just a nice presence in the studio,
kind
too.
Of a Zeppo.
Should we get her some kind of augmentation, some sort of horn? Or?
Yeah, she's kind of like Zippo. She's like she's the Fleming Marx brother. And there you go. Next week, show number 31. Until then, I love you, Mama. I love you, Dad. I miss you both. Show up, pay attention, tell the truth, and don't be attached to the outcome. And have yourself a great week. And maybe we'll have Cranky Dog in the studio next week. That should be a lot of fun.
I look forward to it.
All right. Thanks very much. Take care, guys. Bye-bye.
This is over now, and you just got to deal with it.
I want you to know it's over.
It's over, Jenny. It's over.
It's over, Harvey. I'm sorry. I need to get on with my life.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Elvis has left the building.
I'm in my vagina.